All right, rock and roll, we got it done. I am really sorry about taking a half an hour to get started, but that only affected those of you who are watching live, and it was absolutely necessary. We have got such an incredible show for you today. I am totally excited about this. It is a mind-blowing event that has taken place. So we do have the topics that I was going to talk about already, which are the Ascension Diet and preparing for ascension, things like this, the stumbling blocks that get in our way. But there have been such stunning breakthroughs that have literally just happened that I feel like I had to let you know what was going on. So here's the deal. And we can cut to the slide for a second. We have two new insiders who have come forward on the story of Antarctica, and they came in through Linda Moulton Howe. Now, let me say this. Back to the camera here. Linda Moulton Howe has been a colleague of mine, a friend of mine for a long time. She is speaking this weekend at the Conscious Life Expo. I am not there for several reasons, which I greatly regret, but nonetheless, it had to happen. So, Linda Moulton Howe, I spoke to her on the phone yesterday, and she told me about two new military insiders. And last night, I watched the videos, her two live videos on her channel on YouTube, which is earthfiles.com. Now, I've got to tell you guys before we go any farther, this stuff is so amazing. I have literally been shaking with excitement all day. We have solved our technical problems, by the way. You will probably notice that the picture quality is way the heck better. We found three different things that were inhibiting our picture quality. Suffice it to say, we solved the problems, and now we are at a much, much higher level of quality, so I'm very happy about that. Getting back to Linda Moulton Howe now. I heard about this first because Dr. Michael Salla wrote an article about it on his website, exopolitics.org. I read the article and I said, wait a minute. He had asked me a while ago about the idea of a black octagon under the ice in Antarctica. Had I heard anything about that? And I said, no. Now, of course, I don't know everything. There's a lot of insiders out there. So let's just get started with an orientation in case you don't really know what I've been doing all these years. If this is all new to you and you're like, who is this guy? That's a cool cinematic opening, but what the heck are we talking about here? Okay. Since 19, what was it really? 1996, I have directly met insiders who worked for the military or the defense community at levels of secrecy that were 35 levels above the President of the United States. That's called cosmic clearance. Now, as strange as this may sound to you, once you get up to the cosmic clearance level, it is widely known that there is an open interaction with multiple extraterrestrial races within our military-industrial complex and quote-unquote government. However, the President of the United States can come and go in 4 years, like with Jimmy Carter. So actually, you don't always get anything real as the president. What has happened is a breakaway civilization, a situation in which what's really going on is actually being hidden from people, even all the way up to the highest elected office in the country. And that is a crime, obviously. So let's just think about for a minute all of the UFO sightings that people have been having, all of the strange things that people report, the saucers in the sky, landing traces, and of course, May 2001, I went to the Disclosure Project event in Washington, D.C. That was headed by Dr. Stephen Greer, financed by Jan Bravo, as they revealed in the movie Sirius, which I was also in. At this event, there were 39 different people who came forward who had clearances to have direct access to the UFO information that is being kept hidden from us by our government. Many of the world's top media resources were there in the room at the National Press Club when this was done on May 9th. Now, I didn't get to go to the May 9th one because seating was very limited, but I did manage to get a VIP ticket because I had just broken out onto Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell the month before. I had two shows, one that was an hour, one that was 4 hours long, the full show. So I was able to get into this amazing, amazing historical event. And I met most of the 39 whistleblowers who were there at the Disclosure Project. They presented physical evidence. They presented their bona fides, their credentials. They were vetted out people, and they were risking their lives. And being there on the ground, I can tell you it was so exciting because of the brimming enthusiasm. And we knew that it was a very highly populous event. As an example, the National Press Club's server for video streaming, now this is back in 2001 when you had to use RealPlayer and it was really bad quality and a little bitty picture, they had never had that many streaming requests in the history of their service before, and it broke the streaming. Now what happened is I got to go to a closed executive summary briefing for VIPs and members of Congress the next day on May 10th. And I actually sat directly behind Helen Thomas, who was really the person that made this all possible. She was able to get this to happen in the National Press Club. She had interviewed Nixon, John F. Kennedy, Carter, I mean, every president you can think of, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, everybody, Clinton, I mean, you name it. So I sat right behind Helen Thomas, and half of the people in the room were either congressmen or their senators. This is live. I can't take that back. Congressmen are their aides, okay? So, you would think, right, that there'd be a lot of these kind of crossed arms and people are like, I don't know, man. But no, let me tell you something. When certain whistleblowers spoke, there wasn't a single person who didn't rise up to their feet and give a rousing standing ovation. This thing was electric. It was on fire. The people who were there knew they were making history. You have 39 people with impeccable credentials who came forward. And I hung out there for the rest of the week in the same hotel where a lot of the other people were staying. And there was another event they had that weekend. I guess it was on Saturday for the public if they wanted to come. And during that time, I got to meet most of the 39 insiders. And that was some of the first times that I met insiders. And Dr. Greer has acknowledged that I was there. I mean, obviously I was. I've met many of the people who were there, and they remember me from the event. I did look a little different back then. I had a beard, but it's still me. So I've changed over the years, of course, but, you know, no big deal. Anyway, after this happened, I became a lot more public on the internet, especially beginning in 2004 when my first book came out. 2005, I began a public affiliation with Richard C. Hoagland, talking about interplanetary climate change. And then in 2007, I was on Project Camelot at the dawn of YouTube, and that's when my career really started going nuts. What followed was getting on Ancient Aliens, which has now become over 100 episodes that I'm in on History Channel, getting a book deal with Penguin Random House. That book goes to the New York Times bestseller list. Then the second book, Synchronicity Key, like Sourcefield, the first one, also was a New York Times bestseller. I did 5.5 years with Gaia. I had the top two shows in the network, which was Cosmic Disclosure and Wisdom Teachings. And now I'm going through this live channel to get you information. So we have so much that has been covered over the course of my career. And if you've been watching what I'm doing, you will know that I have had many insiders come forward to me since the time that I was at the Disclosure Project. And unfortunately for everyone else in the UFO community as researchers, there are actually several insiders who only ever spoke to me. They only trusted me. They didn't want to talk to anybody else. I met a lot of people through Project Camelot, and it was actually Kerry Cassidy who first alerted me to Pete Peterson in 2009. And we flew out to his home state. I actually financed the whole thing. I didn't have a lot of money, but I wasn't going to miss this for the world. And so we taped those videos for Camelot right in a hotel near his house. And Pete Peterson was the one who first introduced me to the idea of an alliance, where I got direct firsthand knowledge that there was a sizable contingent within the military, within the intelligence community, that wanted the secrecy to be blown out the airlock. They want the truth, they want disclosure, because we have technologies, we as in humanity, have technologies that are being held back that if they came out would utterly transform our civilization in such dramatic ways that it would eliminate deserts we would be able to desalinate ocean water, generate free energy with byproducts of any element in the periodic table. We green the deserts. We can eliminate radioactivity, eliminate pollution. The planet could sustain far more people than it does now. And we have anti-gravity. We have limitless clean energy. We have amazing health technology that will just completely eliminate cancer, diabetes, any of the types of diseases, problems that we have, pain, speeding up the healing process for broken bones, for torn ligaments, anything like this. It's totally amazing. So Pete Peterson was revealing to me that this alliance, I came up with the name originally, we had to come up with something to call it. The alliance was actually really working hard to bring us the truth. And I had heard all the way back in 2009 about mass arrests, that there would be tribunals, that the most evil and sadistic people in the world who were doing really horrific stuff, that we're not even going to get into all of it, you've heard me talk about this many times, that those people would be brought to trial, that they would be actually forced to answer for their crimes, and that they would be then incarcerated, or in some cases actually receive the death penalty. So, things have gone really wild because I've been talking about this since 2009. I had other insiders giving me information about these mass arrests, and then really strange things started to happen. I've been tracking it on my website, divinecosmos.com. Just go in and read David's blog, and you'll see many different examples of this. Things really got interesting beginning in 2014 when Corey Good came forward. Now, by this point, you have to understand something. Even before I met Pete Peterson, for the previous 2 years, I'd been talking to another guy named Henry Deacon. And that's his assumed name. I'm not using his real name. Henry Deacon claimed that he worked... Henry Deacon claimed that he worked on a base on Mars, and that he went to a military base in the UK. He would park in the parking lot. He would walk in the front door. He'd go through a series of security checkpoints. He'd walk down a long, rounded hall that they called the corridor. At the end of the hall is an elevator. He had an ordinary house key. He'd hit the button. The elevator door would open very slowly. He goes inside. He puts the house key in a little lock in there. The door closes. And then when the door opens again, he was on Mars. And this was a portal system technology. So why was it a house key? He claimed that it would reduce psychological impact, that it was less stressful to people if it looked like a regular elevator. And I asked him, did you feel anything when you go through the portal? He said, no. I mean, it was a very slight, kind of like an electrical zing, but otherwise nothing. So what he reported was that there was a base that he would work at on Mars. He was trained in repairing a certain type of technology that was advanced. The base had 200,000 personnel, but only 10,000 of them were people born on Earth. So what is the other 190,000? He reported seeing some 43 different types of extraterrestrials that he could remember. And most of them looked like people. This is one of the interesting, strange things. They were shorter, they were taller, they had all different kinds of skin colors. They had pastel blue, pastel green, pastel yellow, pastel pink. Some of them were jet black and had really dark bloodshot eyes. But the point is, they all pretty much looked human or humanoid in nature. Everybody had what was called the five-star pattern. So it's pretty wild to hear this guy, and he didn't even really want to talk about this stuff. He was actually bored by his job. He said most of the time he was on Mars, he spent playing ping pong. You can believe that. Now, I wanted to ask all these questions. He did tell me that they had these drilling and boring machines that would bore out tunnels in the Martian underground, and that you would then go through a bullet train to get to your destination. He said that different rooms had gravity plates on the floor so that depending on what the gravitational needs were of a given extraterrestrial race, that within their room, the gravity was comfortable for them. And they had climate and things like this, but apparently most people breathe the same air, and other ones would have breathing apparatus that they would use. There were certain aquatic types that would have to have suits where the water was supplied to them so they could be outside of water if they had gills on certain parts of their body. I remember him telling me that there was one type of aquatic that had gills on its chest going down in horizontal lines, and they would smear algae on those gills in order to eat, to ingest. That there was another type where it actually went through their skin, and they would just put their hands into an algae bucket, okay? Sounds gross, but apparently for them it was utterly delicious. You taste with your hands. I know it sounds crazy, but what I'm trying to tell you is I've had probably 80 or 90 different conversations with Henry Deacon alone. Every time I talked to him, he would tell me something wild, unexpected, totally amazing. You could never even try in a video like this to go through all the things that he said. So imagine how surprising it was when I got to meet Pete Peterson, and he knew about many of the same things. He knew there was a manned base on Mars. He knew that we had bases on the moon, which Henry Deacon had also reported. He knew that we were mining, that we were building advanced technology, all of the same sorts of things. And of course, for many years, I kept all of this information offline. Then in 2009, I also met Emery Smith. Emery Smith ended up coming forward only recently, as in the end of the year 2017. And as soon as he tried to come forward, he had all these death threats. Now, I got to meet Emery Smith in 2009, right around the same time that I met Pete Peterson, right around the same time that I actually met another insider later that year named Jacob, who claimed to work for the Rothschilds. And he explained to me that the secret space program was a Rothschild production, that they are arguably the most wealthy family on the planet, that they are sort of the figurehead or Pindar for a group of 13 bloodline families that you might know as a certain name, which we won't say to trigger off certain keyword filters. But so I probably have already done it, right? I said Rothschild, I mean, it's all over. Illuminati, right? They were the Illuminati top family. Let's just put it out there. Okay. So you got Emery Smith. Let's back up a little bit. So I've had Henry Deacon telling me about this base on Mars, that they had underground bases on Earth. There were, in fact, islands that you can't even see that were covered with a holographic dome where it projects something that looks like the ocean. But there's a whole island in there. And if you try to fly or sail near this thing, you will be intercepted and they will get you back out of the way. And there are no-fly zones where you are not legally allowed to fly, and air traffic will redirect your plane. You will get fighter jets that will intercept you if you keep going, because if you breach through this holographic bubble, there's a whole freaking island there. Now, I don't know if the people that did the movie Black Panther actually had briefings about this. They may have, but the island of Wakanda in that movie is very similar to stuff that I've learned about. And I know it sounds crazy, but you got to understand, the movies keep telling you the truth so that we get confused. We don't understand what really is truth, what really is fiction. Oh, David, you're just getting something from that movie. No. There's so much beyond this. Even well before I met Henry Deacon, I had another insider who wants to go by the name Daniel, and he had worked in the so-called Montauk Project, in which he is working for Brookhaven National Laboratories at Montauk Point, Long Island, a derelict military base underground. They had a seat from a UFO, they hooked it up to a power supply, and when they hooked up that seat to the power supply, you could put a person trained in meditation in the chair, they would meditate, clear their mind, think about a place they wanted to go, a portal would open up in the room, and you could put people through it, and they would go to that place, and they also found that it would travel in time. The conclusion they came to was that these seats were being used by occupants of UFOs, like in the Roswell crash that had actually already crashed, that our quote-unquote government had gotten their hands on. Those UFOs were able to travel through time and space by simply thinking about it. You don't have controls, per se. You're in the chair, you decide where you want to go, and it's point and click. Boop, and you just go. So the chair, if you hook it up to the right power supply, will create that same portal that if you were in the ship, you would go through it. Daniel also told me that these ships were trained for human beings. In other words, you walk towards the ship and it'll open up and it wants you to come inside. There's a little conveyor belt that comes down or a little ramp. And it actually is like a life form in a sense. It has a sort of artificial intelligence. There's so much stuff that I've heard, and again, I kept it secret for many years for my own protection, but more importantly, for vetting. I did not want people to come forward and say all the same things that I was saying. I had to figure out who's who in the zoo, so I withheld almost everything for many years. And I met Daniel, by the way, all the way back in 2003 in December. So I got to talk to him quite a bit. And he gave me an incredible amount of information, including the fact that there is a Stargate natural system that was built by something very ancient. In fact, they think it was what they call the ancient builder race. And apparently every planet with humans on it has one of these Stargates. So the television show Stargate SG-1 is actually based on real stuff. And we watched a lot of those episodes together, and he was pointing out things to me, especially the first 2 years of Stargate SG-1 are particularly loaded with disclosure. The characters might seem a little bit cliche, they're a little bit too stereotypical. Yeah, you got the gruff military guy, and you got the dorky, nerdy guy, and then you got the all buff kind of Spock guy and everybody. A lot of the Star Trek archetypes were in this show, but the point is a lot of disclosure. People are traveling through Stargates, they are visiting other worlds, they are visiting other cultures. However, our natural ancient Stargate here on Earth, they buried it under the Antarctic ice because they didn't want anybody coming in. They were worried about that. So they've created other ways of doing Stargates. They use pyramid technology, they'll be near a pyramid, and then they have this system that uses the power of the pyramid to create the Stargate. There's so many things like this that you hear. And so Daniel was also talking about how the gate system is updated by some sort of very advanced ETs, and its original purpose was to facilitate easy travel and communication between different worlds. You can't bring anything with you that isn't organic, so you have to have organic cotton clothing, and if you have something synthetic, it does not make it through. You can't bring any machines or metal or anything like that through these ancient Stargates. Now, the other thing that I heard from Daniel, and then I again heard from Henry Deacon, is that a ride through the ancient Stargate system is extremely disorienting. If you look at the end of the movie Contact, and how Jodie Foster's character goes through this crazy, dizzying portal ride, where it's zipping and zagging back and forth, and it stops, and then it starts, and it's these wormholes, and it's, oh my God. That is exactly what an ancient Stargate ride looks like. Apparently, it is so psychologically overwhelming and destabilizing that for the average person on Earth, you get actually schizophrenic from doing it. You cannot ever really regain your normal mental health. There's something about how we're not advanced enough spiritually to be able to go through these. So the ancient gate system wasn't really seen as anything useful, and also it's a very disorienting ride. You might think it's fun, but it really is not. However, when we get back to the modern Stargate system that I've heard about from other insiders like Henry Deacon, it's just instantaneous. You don't feel anything. You don't get queasy. In fact, the only thing Emery Smith described about these portal rides is that you get this pressure in your ears because a lot of times the air pressure is different when you come out on the other side. And he only got to go and pick vegetables on planets, some kind of rare plant they were looking for. He never ran into people, never saw any buildings. He'd just run in, grab these plants, and run back out. But obviously those plants had some sort of tactical value. So I know how crazy all this sounds. I know it sounds like science fiction for a lot of people. That's as much as you'll ever be able to appreciate of what this is. And that's okay. I'm not trying to push anything on you. I'm just sharing with you some of what I heard. So you can imagine that as the years went by and you have Daniel and then you got Henry Deacon and then you got Pete Peterson, who validated many of the things Henry Deacon was saying. Pete had worked for the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. It's common knowledge that we have a lot of different extraterrestrial species that we're working with, that there are already the ability to go out into space. In fact, more recently, Pete Peterson has told me that our technology has grown so much that there are bases with Americans in them literally all over the galaxy. There's about, I think he said, 35 different bases. I'd have to go back to my notes. There's so many complex details, it's hard to remember everything. But the point is, it's very interesting that it's been over 70 years since the Roswell crash, where most people now believe that the military-industrial complex got its hands on an extraterrestrial operational spacecraft, and they were able to reverse engineer it. That was 1947. So what we're hearing from a variety of whistleblowers is that by the 1950s, we were already starting to colonize the moon, colonize Mars, and pushing farther and farther out with technology that includes superluminal warp capability to be able to warp out to other places outside our solar system. And we have been building and building and building. And this is where so much of the money has gone. The day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld gets on television, announces $2.3 trillion missing from the Defense Department budget. Oops, well, we don't know where that went. Look, when you get into the trillions of dollars, you're talking about enough money to build entire civilizations. According to Pete Peterson, there's over 275 underground bases that can hold 45,000 people, up to 65,000 people. If you let them expand, they have little sockets in the ocean that if they were going to have a nuclear war, they can fire off the nuclear missiles, and then the nuclear sub still has a good breeder reactor in it. They back it up into these sockets and power these underground bases. So yes, the original purpose of the underground cities and all the sub-shuttle trains that connect them together, which they are cities. Now, this is buildings and roads and trees and a big dome that has a fake holographic sky projected on it. Multiple insiders have told me about this. You live in a city. It feels like you're on the surface of the earth. But they have these train systems that connect them together. These guys did want to nuke the planet, okay? They wanted to have a nuclear war. They wanted to get rid of a lot of the people, most of the people on Earth, hide out underground in paradise, because these are beautiful places, many of them, and then come back once everything was gone, which is also why they built the neutron bomb, which just gets rid of people but doesn't damage buildings at all. But everywhere that there was a person, you just get this pile of ash on the ground. Go back and research neutron bombs. That's what they had. So they wanted to just get rid of a bunch of people. But as we've heard from astronauts like Dr. Edgar Mitchell and many others, including Robert Hastings and many of the witnesses that he brought forward at the National Press Club, you have many different insiders, including the ones at the Disclosure Project in 2001, who are saying that they were at a military installation where a UFO shows up over the base, it powers down all of the power on the base. The missiles become radioactively inert. They are not radioactive in the tips, and their guidance systems don't work. And this kept happening and happening and happening. And according to at least three different insiders I've now spoken to, somewhere 1990, 1991, thereabouts, there was a total meltdown by extraterrestrial beings of all the nuclear missile arsenal in every country, whether it's China, whether it's the USSR, or whether it's the USSA, I almost said it. That was Pete's term back when things were not like they are now. It's live, you know, anything could happen. In fact, why don't you hand me that glass of water? I'd love to have a drink right now because, you know, you don't get to have a break on any of this stuff. So you just got to go with it. Thank you. You guys having fun so far? Are the comments just going crazy? They probably are. The live chat is just nuts. And I want to thank you guys for showing up and supporting this. It's very exciting. And I'm just giving you kind of an overview. It's so hard to try to summarize all this stuff together because I have literally heard so much. This has been my entire life for over 20 years. Talking to insiders, those are most of the people I would hang out with. And I would spend hours on the phone with them. So this is a very exciting body of information because if this is true, and I have every reason to believe that it is, the scope of what there is to know, the scope of the cover-up is so vast. We literally are already dealing with multiple extraterrestrial cultures. Those cultures will not let us have a nuclear war. That's what Edgar Mitchell, one of the senior astronauts from the Apollo missions that went to the moon, was telling us, that he had many different people he spoke to from the Roswell crash, confirming it was true, people that were there in Roswell, New Mexico during that time. And he said that there are incredible numbers of testimonials of these UFOs powering down nuclear missiles. So 1990, 1991 is when everything went offline. The Soviet Union just tapped out. The whole country fragmented because they'd been spending so much money on this nuclear arms race with the United States, and now everything they spent their money on is destroyed, and it literally destroyed the Soviet Union. And before that, you already had Gorbachev and Reagan working on Glasnost and Perestroika, which was already trying to denuclearize. So the U.S. immediately switches over to, oh, terrorists, and oh, Iraq. We got to go into Iraq. We got the Gulf War now. But wait a minute, you know, with no more nuclear war threat, that's a really good thing. Somebody like me growing up in the Cold War and this constant threat of nuclear death hanging over our heads, it was wonderful to have that no longer be a factor. So with Pete Peterson, I start hearing about this alliance, that they would have meetings in what they called SCIF rooms, or SCIF, Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. And they would be talking very quietly about this plan that had been there since at least the 1950s. And they called it the plan. That was the pro word. A pro word is something you use to talk about a classified project in a way that nobody overhearing you is going to think anything of it. So they just called it the plan. But if you were an insider and you heard the plan, you knew what they were talking about. The plan was, how do we break the UFO cover-up? Well, the problem is that the people who are maintaining UFO secrecy are also essentially with a Nazi type of mindset. In fact, the Germans had the first secret space program in the late 1930s, and the U.S. ended up losing that war. The U.S. side got pulled in to the German secret space program, and it stayed that way. So they continued to do a lot of the same things they did in World War II. People were being brought in, and they were treated totally like slaves. They built these off-planet facilities to where you can never, ever have a chance of escaping. And in fact, some of the testimony we've heard through Corey Good suggests that the people who live on these bases were told that the United States and the world basically was nuked to a cinder in the 1980s, and you can't go back to the Earth. They're stuck on this off-planet facility. They have no internet access to where we are. They are strictly controlled. They cannot come back to the Earth. They're told it's a radiation zone. Don't go there. So this is very, very interesting, because Pete also talked about the brain drain, where in the 1950s, hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands of people, if not ultimately millions of people, were brought to off-planet locations through offers, and 85% of them were outside the United States. There was a lot of people brought in from countries like Brazil or India or China. So you have actually a lot of people of different races in these off-planet programs. They did bring men and women and families. And what they would do is they would have you write out a bunch of postcards, chronologically dated. If you knew anybody, you would send out those postcards to those people, but as far as they knew, you disappeared or you died or just ran off. So they were able to get, ultimately, many millions of people, because everybody was ordered to have kids. You have to have kids as part of the program. There's a huge population of people in these off-planet bases. So we're literally dealing with a schizoidal world in which the surface people here are totally unaware that there's a massive world underground, and there's a massive world off-planet, whether it's Mars, there's multiple bases on Mars, multiple bases on the moon, and they are already racially integrated with extraterrestrials. And not just a few, but hundreds of different species of extraterrestrials. Now, this might seem, again, really ridiculous to you, but the extraterrestrials have what you would think of as like a prime directive. They are not allowed to come out in the open and show themselves to us. They have to remain hidden. That is part of how we as a society grow to the point where ultimately we will get to meet them. And that's what appears to be coming up now. So Pete Peterson was one of several insiders who also told me that there are very ancient glass-like ruins that were found all over our solar system and in other neighboring solar systems outside of our own, with other stars and planets, that what you see are obelisks and pyramids that are made out of a glass type of material that is actually transparent aluminum. And it's very interesting, as I describe in my book, Ascension Mysteries, the most recent one that's out right now, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about is in Ascension Mysteries, that there are several different ways in which transparent aluminum is being released. It is 5 times stronger than bulletproof glass. You can make it clear, you can make it black, you can make it a color. But what we find is these glass obelisks, pyramids, and domes all throughout the solar system. So even all the way back in 2001, one of the whistleblowers was Carl Wolf, and Carl Wolf reported having worked for the NSA and then going to a NASA facility in which a worker pulled him aside and showed him pictures of all this crazy architecture on the moon that they had taken with the space probes and they were not going to show us. And this was back in the late 1960s, okay? So they already knew this stuff was there when they did the Apollo missions. In fact, they already had manned bases on the moon when the Apollo astronauts touched down. The whole thing was a cover-up. So technology got a lot more advanced. We got extraterrestrial endowments. And this has been the reality that most people don't know anything about. And a lot of people, a lot of keyboard jockeys are probably laughing away with their fingers. But I'm just telling you what I hear. And when you have 10, 15, 20 different guys start telling you the same stuff, and I never made this public, it really gets my attention. So then we have Emery Smith, who comes forward and says that he personally worked on some 2,000 different extraterrestrial biological specimens in an underground facility, which was in New Mexico, and that he was working for a particular contractor, Sandia National Laboratory, that he would go down there, he would have to go through these checkpoints again, get into a special pressurized suit, and he'd go into an operating room where these trays would come out and there would be a being there. Ultimately, he worked on about 1,200 different bodies, he thinks. And they were all kind of human-like, but they had very different features, okay? And then his job was to autopsy these bodies, identify different organ systems, and sometimes cut out certain specimens and push them through drawers where another team would then deal with the specimens more precisely. Now, he's just one guy in one facility where there are many other people who appear to be doing the same jobs in probably hundreds of different rooms like this. So this suggests that there is a very robust trade going on in which we as Earth people are taking in these bodies from all over the galaxy, assessing what they are, writing it all up, and categorizing it into a vast internet Google-style database that we obviously don't have access to, where they want to find out, what are these people's organ systems? Do their eyes function the same? Do they see the same color spectrum that we do? What are their physiological characteristics? What's weird about them? What's their vulnerability? Where are the organs that are the most sensitive? If you needed to shoot and kill one of these beings, where would you do it? And there are certain discrepancies between certain beings so that you can't just say everything's the same. Okay, so Emery was telling me all this stuff all the way back in 2009. I got Pete Peterson telling me the same stuff. Then I meet Jacob, who is working for the Rothschilds, and said that they own the whole thing. They're the ones that are running this, and they actually do consider themselves gods because they have the ability to go off planet and we don't. We got the Roswell technology. Tesla gave us anti-gravity, but they keep us land-bound because they don't want us to know what's going on out there. They don't want us to meet extraterrestrials. They don't want us to save the planet. There is a depopulation agenda where they want to greatly reduce how many people are on Earth, enough to make Hitler look like a Sunday school picnic. And then they roll out this technology, but only to create a total slave society. And it was Jacob where I first started to hear, and also Henry Deacon, in a sense, where I first started to hear about negative extraterrestrials, and with Jacob it became reptilian extraterrestrials. I remember him telling me that their face punched out a little bit more than ours. They do have scaly skin. There's different types with different colors. And they have vertical slit pupils. They have sharp pointed teeth. They have claws, and they don't wear any clothing, although when Henry Deacon saw ones that appeared to be the same type, they were wearing masks, he couldn't see their faces, and they had very colorful, almost video game type leather armor on that was sort of like black and red and very stylized and cool looking. So they looked really badass. So And everybody, when these beings would come into the room, you have to bow. And in fact, Jacob described how you had to do this movement. You had to bend at the knees and put your hand on your chest like this. I'm trying not to touch my microphone. Put your hand out and do that. And by the way, he was describing meetings with these beings, which are much taller than us. The senior ones are 14 feet tall, so they're gigantic. And they treated human beings like garbage. They don't care about us. They think that we are pathetic, filthy creatures. And what these beings have done is they have made contact with certain groups on earth or individuals who are susceptible. If people were doing certain types of practices, whether it's ritual magic, black magic, this kind of stuff, you draw a pentagram on the ground, you put black candles on each of the five corners, you're trying to summon something in the magic circle. People have seen these types of beings appear in their magic circle. And there are very, very elaborate rules of contact of what you can do and what you can't do in terms of meeting these beings. And you can get them to work for you, but you have to do the darkest, most sinister, horrible stuff. Because these beings apparently feed on an energy that is given off by human misery, human sadness, and death. And it's called Lush. Okay, so they feed on this, and so if people are part of this organized ritual magic, they know what they're doing, they can actually get cooperation with these beings. And this apparently started, in modern times at least, with the court of Queen Elizabeth through their astrologer John Dee, who sort of rediscovered the technology, if you want to call it that, and figured out how to get it to work and got a partnership going with these beings. So these beings have been working behind the scenes for a long time, and it sounds crazy once again, but their goal has been to create this new world order. They cannot come down here. The rules do not allow them to come down here and rule openly. You're not going to be worshiping the reptilian god, okay? And there are no shape-shifting people in the Illuminati, okay? That's another misnomer. There do appear to be people who get a telepathic relationship with some of these beings, and if you're psychic, you might see a reptilian face sort of overlay on their face. And I've actually seen that. In fact, when I met Jacob, at the end when he was shaking my hand, that happened. I got an overlay on his face, and it really freaked me out. So I've actually seen that. But they're not, they don't physically shapeshift. There's no flesh changing that we've ever heard of from these insiders. So that is a misnomer. But what happens is the people here on Earth are working as proxies. They are being told what to do, but in exchange for following their orders from these reptilian overlords, if you will, they get to have incredible wealth. They're billionaires. They have incredible power on Earth. They get to control things. They get to do things up to a large degree the way they want. But what the Draco, or the Saurians as they're called, want is they want the world to be a fear farm. They want everybody sad and depressed. The most interesting thing Jacob ever told me was that if everybody on Earth felt happy and joyful for even one day, that the whole overlord agenda would be destroyed. That's all it takes, is one day for the majority of all people on Earth to be smiling and happy and laughing. That then that Lush system would break down, because these beings literally depend on Lush. If they don't get it, they will die, and it will literally kill them in one day. So this is a lot to take in, of course, but this is why the Draco allowed us on Earth in the secret programs to have a secret space program in the first place. It was to be able to create a fleet in which they could go out and invade other worlds. And this is what was so amazing. In 2016 is when we had William Tompkins come forward. Tompkins was a World War II veteran, and he was the main point contact for people that were American spies embedded in the German secret space program. So yes, the Nazis had a secret space program. There was a lot of stuff they were doing down in Antarctica. William Tompkins comes forward and said that he was responsible for 22 of these embedded spies, or 23, it was something like that, and that they were feeding information back to him, and he would put it into these packages and then give the packages to major leaders of the military during World War II, which is 1941 and 1945. What is he telling them? He's telling them that the Germans are working in these facilities in which you have these giant reptilian-looking beings that rule over everybody, and that the people were building different types of spacecraft with technology given to them by the reptilians to create an invasion fleet so that the reptilians could conquer other worlds as well as what they were trying to do on Earth. And they were using these people to help them. Now, this is what Tompkins was talking to American top brass about in World War II. They had a really hard time believing it, but it all ended up being true, and this was the origin of the secret space program. William Tompkins also validated everything that Corey Good had started telling me beginning in 2014. And remember, this is 5 years after I started talking to Jacob in 2009. And what Corey was telling me lined up with Jacob, it lined up with Daniel, it lined up with Pete Peterson, it lined up with Henry Deacon, everybody. And also William Tompkins pretty much hit off everybody. So you got to understand that the scope of this thing is huge. It has been remarkably well kept as a secret, but we now have new witnesses who have come forward who are actually bringing out information through Linda Moulton Howe that really, really is a game changer. And so that is the subject of some of these slides that I'm going to be getting into here. You guys liking this so far? You having a good time? Just let me know in the comments. Hope I'm not overwhelming you with too much information here. So just to take a little breather for a second from all this cosmic stuff, I want to show you something. This is a stunning benchmark that took place very, very recently, as in right around the time before our previous broadcast. Now, what am I showing you here? Look closely at this. This is a slide from my video, my screen capture program. And you'll notice that it says at the bottom, DW_5M_YT, February 12, 2019, 10:24 a.m., 59 kilobytes JPEG. Then you'll see right after that, in a very short period of time, I then got pictures of Christina Applegate, I got Glenn Beck, Gerard Butler, Justin Bieber, Brad Pitt, Charlize Theron, Beyonce, Angelina, Taylor Swift, Kim Kardashian, and Cardi B. Now, I could take other pictures of this, but I'm just giving you the basic idea. Notice the time interval. They're all pretty much close together here. Now, why would I do this? I did this because when I looked at my own score of how many videos there were with my name in them on YouTube, this is what I got. That's the picture that I took on February 12th at 10 whatever in the morning. 5,150,000 YouTube results. Now, the reason why I was doing this, let's go back to camera. The reason why I was doing this was that I am looking into various showbiz deals. There is a whole lot of exciting movement going on for disclosure in which I'll be able to do things besides just live streaming like this. And it's very exciting. This is why I came back to Los Angeles. So, you know, we're putting feelers out. Nothing is totally solid yet, but there's some very nice, interesting prospects. Actually, there's some really cool stuff that may be getting very close now. But it's, you know, it's been quite a process, and you never really know what's going on until you actually have the signed contract, right? But as part of the research to show how popular I was, I wanted to look at how many videos do I have on YouTube, because this is a benchmark, okay? This is a benchmark that shows how much of a following you have by tracking it strictly organically. The number of videos on YouTube corresponds to how many people get up the gumption to make a video where you are in the title. They want to make something, they want to upload it, they want to put it out there on the internet. They want to make that statement and use your name. And so what are the parameters of who would get this kind of a score and how do you measure it? Well, guess what? It used to be when you typed in a name on YouTube that it would tell you how many results you got. And over time, I would fluctuate somewhere between about 500,000 to 600,000 down to maybe 240,000. And that was over the past, like, let's say 3 years. So it would get pretty large, but then as of last August, it wasn't visible anymore. So I went and I looked up, okay, is there a way to do this? Is there a way to bring these videos out Let's go over to this one now. Is there a way to bring these videos out where we can get a number? And so I looked it up online and I found out you type in the name on Google, then you type in the word site, S-I-T-E, then a colon, and then youtube.com, okay? When you do that and then you hit the button, what comes up is a number that shows you how many search results you get. And this is a great way of tracking the amount of following that you have. So again, with this in mind, please look back on this slide because this is what I got. When I typed it in on February 12th, I believe it was, 5.15 million different videos. And again, let's go back to the previous slide here where you can see this freaked me out so much. I was so amazed that there was that many and that it was such a benchmark that I then look at all these other names just I could think of off the top of my head. Christina Applegate, Glenn Beck, Gerard Butler, Justin Bieber, Brad Pitt, Charlize, Beyonce, Angelina, Taylor Swift, Kim Kardashian. I did a whole bunch more, okay? But here's the point, and this was really interesting and contentious, is that I then typed in this. And that's a little bit farther up. If I had taken more pictures of my screen capture utility, Hillary Clinton had 2.9 million. So I was almost double Hillary Clinton's numbers. This starts to really amaze me, obviously, because Hillary Clinton is a major, major, major celebrity. Like, she ran for president, and everybody knows the name, right? But in terms of the actual organic engagement on YouTube, my name was almost double. How in the world did that happen? Well, YouTube is very fickle, and it's totally based on raw organic popularity. So then I say, okay, let me look at some other names. And so these are only a few, and I stuck strictly to the political arena here because I didn't have time to go beyond it. But let's look at some other ones now. So I did Hillary Clinton. I got 2.9 million. I did Barack Obama. I got 6.9 million. That made sense. Then I said, well, let's see the guy who's really stirring things up, causing trouble, Alex Jones. Okay, 7.14 million. That makes sense. You know, a lot of people were talking about him, and he got deplatformed, right? He couldn't even have a voice. He wasn't allowed to talk. Then I looked up Nancy Pelosi. She's got 11.2 million. And the President of the United States, Donald Trump, 47.8 million. So he's got a lot more. But that makes sense because he's the frickin' President of the United States. But nonetheless, to get these kinds of numbers myself, let's go back to camera for a sec. To get these kinds of numbers myself was totally, totally mind-blowing. And so I continued to track this thing and wanted to see where it was going. So then, the day before our broadcast was Valentine's Day. On Valentine's Day, I type in my name again and I do a search. Let's see what happens. It's gone up a little bit. Remember, it was at 5.15. Now it's at 5.26. Google now, by the way, has a Valentine's Day logo for February the 14th with a heart on it. And no, I did not have the time to go and fake all this. I can prove that all this is true, that this really did happen. Many of you during my broadcast went and looked, and you saw what the numbers were. Still on Valentine's Day, I look up Hillary. Hillary's doing a little bit better now. She's at 3.24, so 40,000 more videos or so show up. And then I look up Alex Jones. Well, somehow Alex Jones took a big hit in a short time. About a million videos disappeared for Alex Jones in just a couple of days, because this is 2 days later, right? Obama, he's right about the same, 6.64 million. Nancy Pelosi, she took a hit. There was probably a bunch of videos about her that were negative that got pulled down. That's just speculation, I don't know. But she went from 11 million down to 7.5 million. And again, after all of the different, back to camera for a sec, after all of the different names that I looked at, the guy who is consistently the highest, no matter what, and I looked at every single celebrity that there is. I went through all of them. I went through all the lists of celebrity names, everybody. I even went at things like PewDiePie and Dude Perfect, which is literally videos where these guys are bouncing balls, and they do really cool stuff, and it lands in a cup. He's laughing. He knows what it is. Dude Perfect, man. Dude Perfect, I guess they were at like 70 million or something like that. But Will Smith, as you can see right here, 151 million videos on Valentine's Day. So this is the kind of data that I'm burying myself in. Then I go back just to take another picture of it. This is a new picture, 5.26 million results once again. Then on the day that the broadcast was going to be done, that our live broadcast was going to be done, I shot up even more to 5.98 million views. This was unbelievable because now I'm at 6 million views. So literally, it's almost double. Let's go back over to this one here. I was literally almost double, basically double Hillary Clinton because she was at like 3.1, 3.2. So I'm obviously very excited about this, and I did this over the course of days, February 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th, right up to when we do the broadcast, okay? I'm typing this thing in, I'm seeing my name, I'm seeing almost 6 million videos, right? It's a miracle. I'm tripping out. We sent it to several people in showbiz that we were talking about various deals with. My team was looking at it, and then I gave it to you guys to look at. And everybody was getting a chance to see this. Now, here's what's really interesting. It's what happens 3 days after the show. So before I show you what happens 3 days after the show, let's roll the clip up on track number one. This is from the show itself. Check it out. No, it's this one right here. We've been checking the number of YouTube videos that have my name in the title, and believe it or not, in the last few days, it's been nearly 6 million different videos on YouTube that have my name in them, and we're going to be talking about that. And incidentally, to show you how significant that is, right now the number of videos with the name Hillary Clinton in them, 3.1 million. So we're almost double the number of actual videos where people either love you or hate you or whatever, but they put that name into the title of a video and they upload it to YouTube. So I don't know why it took me so long to do something like this. I've been working on this live setup for many years. But anyway, let's rock and roll. Hit that, and then hit that. And then go back down to, it'll stay on the slide, yeah. So now I go and I open my big effing mouth because I had to think, oh, nothing's going to happen. Nothing big is going to happen. I got 6 million videos, right? That's just the way it is. That's organic. I've got pictures of it on February 12th. I got pictures of it on Valentine's Day with the heart. I got pictures of it on the 15th. I'm ramping up. There's hundreds of thousands of videos getting uploaded in just a few days because so many people are excited about my upcoming show. 3 days after we do the show, and remember, I handed this to you. I told you how to do it. I said, type in my name, then the word site, a colon, youtube.com. Go take a look. 3 days later, I go back to Google and I type in my name with the same formula. Take a look at what happened. I swear to God, this is what happened. Take a look. Go to slide. Now, how in the world did this happen? Only 3 days after I opened my big effing mouth, I go from 6 million videos on YouTube down to a 250,000 videos. And then it starts dropping. It drops to 241,000, and then it drops down to 222,000. Meanwhile, it's so unbelievable. I'm saying to myself, how in the heck did this happen? Let's go back over here. Let's go to this one. How in the heck did this happen? Who could have done this? Now, bear in mind, nobody emailed me, said, well, David, you know, we're sorry about the mix-up. We're sorry about the number of video counts. And, you know, we fixed it. Don't worry about it. It was all a misunderstanding. This is like serious deep state stuff. Somebody on the inside, I don't know what they did. I don't know. I mean, like, think about this, right? The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Here he goes. Oh, Constitution. Here comes the tinfoil hat, right? I'm going to do it. The Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says that we are protected against unlawful search and seizure of property. And there's a lot of constitutional arguments going on now about how does this iterate into the online community. Would you be able to say that the videos that have my name in them are the property of the community? That they're the property of my brand, of my identity, if you want to think of it that way? Somehow, there was an unlawful seizure of 5.75 million videos. Now, I don't know how this was done. We've spent a lot of time talking about it on the inside here. It appears that probably those videos are still there, but that they just changed the search criteria. But I'm not blaming anybody in Google. I think this was probably done by some kind of alphabet agency. Oh, well, wait a minute. Right? You know what the parent company for Google is called. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, let's hope this video stays up, okay? Let's just hope it stays online and that you can watch this. I wanted to show you something that nobody's ever seen before. How do you make 5.75 million videos disappear practically overnight? Why? Because somebody obviously wanted to embarrass me and make it look like I am not at double the number of where Hillary Clinton was at. So now you're understanding why I had to be a half an hour late getting this thing started, because I was frantically putting these slides together for you to try to get this information out. So now that we've gotten through all that, and I've already done a whole hour here, I want to get into the main course of what has gotten me so excited, because in the midst of all this stuff, let's go to the slide, we have a grand update. Disclosure is happening now in a very, very exciting way. One of the things that popped up recently that seems to be talking about this was on Dave Hodges' Common Sense show, Freeing America One Enslaved Mind at a Time, and it says, mainstream media is going to spring a fake disclosure Antarctica to Mars deception. Disclosure is coming. Don't believe a word of it. Antarctica to Mars connection will be made in the mainstream media. This is the great deception. Do not fall for it. So Dave Hodges has an insider named Steve Quayle. You probably know who he is. Let's go back to camera. And Steve Quayle was telling him that he has insider sources saying, telling Dave Hodges, that he has insider sources saying that they are getting ready to do the Antarctica secret ancient ruins being discovered, and that they are paralleling ruins on the moon and ruins on Mars. Now, where might he have gotten this idea? He may have his own sources, but it definitely was coming out through Linda Moulton Howe, who is a veteran researcher in this community. She's been doing this for a very, very long time. And it was on February 20th, so just literally a couple days ago, that she came out with the groundbreaking second live video that she did, where she set up her own live studio, just like I've done here. And she's talking about this amazing, amazing testimony of two guys who are both military, one of whom is a Navy SEAL, which is about as hard to get credentialed for as anything in the military, okay? Becoming a Navy SEAL is very, very difficult. And he has everything to lose and nothing to gain. He is not going forward with his name. He is not going forward with his face. She had to black out his face. She taped him last July, and only now was she actually able to use the video. She's breaking it up into six parts. And the first two parts have just come out. The first one came out in January. The second one just came out a couple days ago at the time of this taping. Again, I called her on the phone yesterday morning, actually, as she was flying in for Conscious Life Expo. She's going to be talking about it at this event this weekend right here in Los Angeles. So if you're around, I would recommend going and checking out Linda Moulton Howe. And also Emery Smith is going to be there as well. That's another really good reason to be there. Anyway, what Linda's insiders are telling her is that they were part of a naval program, or no, not the Navy. Yeah, Navy, right, because it's a Navy SEAL. That this guy was part of a team. Both of these witnesses were on the same team, apparently. They go in through a submarine. Then they have a helicopter that flies them into McMurdo Base. And then from McMurdo Base, which is in sort of the southern, little bit west part of Antarctica, they take a snow vehicle, and they're driving over the snow to a site that you literally cannot go to unless you are cleared by the military. Now, as you drive towards this site, this is what you see. Take a look at this slide. This is a drawing from the insider himself, calling himself Spartan 1. Now, what is that little black thing down there? That is apparently a ruin that is octagonal in shape, made out of a volcanic type of basalt material. Basalt is one of the hardest materials there are. Now, they drove up to this thing, and this is now, I'm going to back up one slide, what he said it looked like from the top, that it was literally an octagon made out of basalt, that the ice is melting away, and that you can see this thing, anybody can see this thing as you drive up to it. Now, apparently there were covert... Girlie, don't do it. I got a noisy dog, guys. I'm sorry. This is live TV. There is nothing we can do about that. So we have this octagonal basalt structure, and he claims that there are bigger octagons below the top one. So as you go lower, you get another octagon that's bigger and another octagon that's bigger, with a total of 62 acres of space. Now, you notice that it says on this diagram that it says door and then there's an arrow. So this is what it looks like as you come in from the side, okay, in this land vehicle. And then he says, let's go to the door slide. Did I have that one there? No, I guess I missed that. So just give me a second and I think I did take a picture of that. So I really want you to see the door. Well, actually, no, it doesn't really matter at this point. Let's go over to my notes here. So let me maximize this now. So you can get all the things. This is so new, you guys, that I literally didn't have time to make slides out of this stuff. So here's the notes anyway. I'll put the cursor up here so it's not as disruptive. And I'm just going to read this to you so you can read along with me. He was a Navy SEAL. He visited it in August 2003. And he's a retired Navy SEAL now. His code name is Spartan 1. The taping was on July 19th. The first broadcast was on January 23rd. The second one was on February 20th. It was 62 acres inside, heated and lighted by an unknown energy source. And Linda Moulton Howe thinks that it had to have been 34 to 33 million years old based on the conventional view of when the ice was on Antarctica. Now, here's the guy. He's a first lieutenant in Naval Special Operations SEAL Team. He was dispatched unofficially on a research and reconnaissance mission, officially to find a certain individual, obtain information, and bring him back. This contact, by the way, let's cut to the camera for a second. This is a very important point. First of all, and I didn't have the slide, you'll have to go back and watch Linda's video, okay? But he said that when you walked up to the door, that it's this huge basalt door that's 13 feet wide, 13 feet deep, but you can just push on it with one finger and it just opens right up. You go inside and you have this amazing room temperature, like it's 40 degrees below zero outside at the best, right? It's very, very cold. You go inside, it's like 68 to 72 degrees Fahrenheit. It's warm. And what you have is ceilings that are like 22 to 23 feet tall. It's all carved, laser-carved basalt, this black stone. And then along the walls are these hieroglyphic inscriptions that look sort of like Mayan hieroglyphics and sort of like Egyptian hieroglyphics, suggesting that what we see in Egypt and in the Maya might be hand-me-downs from a greater proto-language, which is totally amazing to me, that actually it's just two different versions, sort of like how languages are created. There's a mother tongue of Latin, right? Then you have French and German and Spanish and Portuguese and English, and they all kind of are derivative of Latin. But it's people doing things differently, and then that's what everybody starts to do. That's apparently what happened here. We have a proto-hieroglyphic language that this all started from. Now, he also said that the floors and the ceilings were glowing green with some kind of illumination. And so there was a scientist who had been brought in there to take pictures of these hieroglyphics to try to decipher them. And obviously they gave him a camp and they gave him food. So he was able to live there for a long time, food and water. This guy didn't want to leave, okay? So it appears from what he's saying that they went back in to extract the guy because he literally felt this is so important that he wanted to take pictures for everything that was going on in there for the good of humanity, for the sake of our future. So let's go back now to my notes. We'll read a little more. So it says again, officially to find a certain individual, obtain information, bring him back. The contact decided he was staying, and he wanted to obtain as much information as he could, and there were photographs and firsthand stories of what they found. So they come in on a U.S. aircraft carrier. They were then flown in with Nighthawk helicopters. They took vehicles that he called half-tracks to the final destination, as I showed you, his drawing. The first wall structure and door was approximately 50 feet under the ice. It was octagonal, three octagons, each one deeper underground and wider, almost 18 feet poking from the ice on the first one. That's the height of the wall you saw, 17 to 20, made of a shiny black basalt. You would have to see it. There is no way not to. Okay, now let's go on here, and you can see again why it was so hard. I only got these notes last night. He said people were either paid off not to speak or were scared. That's why he thinks nobody's come forward before. This was pretty dubious. It's kind of hard to believe. The structure was found in the early 14th or 15th century. Whoa, 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 whoa. Now, again, that's the kind of thing that skeptics are going to go, and all the keyboard jockeys get fired up. Because Antarctica wasn't even officially discovered, right, until, I guess, like the 1800s. It's pretty recent. But there probably were covert missions, because one of the things Jacob told me, the high-level Rothschild insider, was that actually America had been found earlier than what was reported, and there's this famous runic stone that was found in America. And that apparently was the Templar group claiming the land of America as their own. There's some sort of like, they believe there's a cosmic law where if they do this, that can be done. So if you know what I'm talking about, it's been talked about on, I don't know, Ancient Aliens. Lots of different things have talked about this stone. It's nothing new. So it's entirely possible that covert sea missions were going on. In fact, another thing Jacob told me was that The Tempest, right? The Shakespeare story, The Tempest, was actually that Francis Bacon was Shakespeare. There's a whole drawer in the Library of Congress card catalog saying that Sir Francis Bacon was William Shakespeare. The real William Shakespeare, the guy that had the name, couldn't even sign his name. He had to do an X. And yet after he died, he supposedly published 5 or 6 plays posthumously, but there were no books found in his house when he died. How does he write 6 plays after he died? Well, the answer is, Francis Bacon was part of a secret society, and Hamlet was based on the idea that he was actually the illegitimate son of Queen Elizabeth. She did have a son with Lord Dudley, and Lord Dudley was very unpopular, so she couldn't officially claim him. Sir Francis Bacon was that child. She handed off the child to her lady-in-waiting, Lady Bacon. And Lady Bacon raised Francis as if he was her son, but in fact he was Elizabeth's kid. Then when he finds out that he was actually Elizabeth's child, he, by this point, had already started to have romantic feelings for his mother, not knowing she's his mother. That's what the whole Hamlet story is about. It was actually blowing the whistle on real stuff in the Elizabethan court. And again, there is an entire drawer of cards in the Library of Congress just on books proving that William Shakespeare is Sir Francis Bacon. Okay, Sir Francis Bacon believed that we could go back to America and find the new Atlantis. So they were looking for Atlantis. So Jacob told me that Bacon was actually on some of these ships where they did covert sea missions and they nearly died trying to find Atlantis. So they went to America and they probably also went to Antarctica, and I don't know how they survived the cold, but this is the insider briefing that he got, that apparently they found it all the way back then. Now let's go back to the notes. So he said that it was apparently found in the 14th or 15th century, but that more recently they rediscovered in the late 1950s, early 1960s, and began exploring it then. He describes a coalition that was working on this together, which is Great Britain, United States, France, Germany, Canada, and Russia. And he said that they have had a space fleet in existence for the last 25 years, all of these coalition countries. Let's stop right there for a second. That was one of the things that's totally amazing, because he doesn't know very much about this. And when you get real insiders, by the way, a guy like this, you don't get everything. You don't get the perfect served on a platter disclosure. You have to kind of listen to the guy. It's quirky. It's weird. There's weird details to the story. Like, what is he talking about? But yet, it fits in with other things that we hear from other insiders. I do not believe these guys are LARPers. LARP is live-action roleplay, right, which means somebody who's faking. I don't think this is a LARP. This guy seems very serious. I talked to Linda about this extensively. She said these guys are totally vetted out. They're terrified of coming forward. They don't know about other people's testimony. And Linda has not been totally familiar with what we've been doing either. So I want to get her in here so we can compare notes. And I told her I want to do that. And I also want to help promote her live stream because this is amazing stuff. All right, let me read a little more for you. So those doors that would push open with one finger, he said there's pivots at the top and bottom. They're between 18 and 30 foot thick. And they were lit from the bottom and top, as I said, lime green color. We already talked about the temperature. There were no generators, fixtures, lamps, bulbs, or wires in there whatsoever. And he said, as I told you, that there was 62 acres of this stuff all under the ice. And the walls are lined with hieroglyphics that look Egyptian and Mayan, but not exactly like either one. And there was a star chart and a black sun symbol. So then he says, as far as the age goes of this secret space program, he said that his briefings were, we've been talking to several races since the 1950s and 60s. The few insiders that he spoke to personally said that they are human-looking people. They look and talk like us. They have minor differences in their eyes, mouth, and their body structure. Most of them have no hair. They are bald. They have a human-looking head. Some have a larger skull. A few have a smaller skull. They have much greater strength, mental capacity, and strategic capability. They were off-world from their own origins. They've been in contact with us since time began. There seems to be a general consensus that they seeded us on Earth. So let's go back now to the slides because I want to show you some of these things of what he's talking about. So let me just jump back into this for just a second. Okay, so this is what the octagon looks like as you're walking towards it in this half-track thing, he said. And this is what he drew of being inside. Now, you're not getting all the details, right? Because on the walls, there are these hieroglyphics. Now, this must be absolutely stunning. Just imagine this thing is like almost 30 feet tall. It's this shiny black stone. It's totally hard stone. You walk down to the end of the hall. It's all greenish lit from the top and bottom. And then you see at the end there that there's you see what looks like a bent wall, and that is what it is. That is a ramp. So you walk down to the end of this room, and then you take a left, and now you're walking down on an angle down this ramp to the next level down of the structure, which is a bigger octagon, and then you go through another ramp and you go to an even bigger octagon below that. So there's a total of three octagons, right? Now this is really interesting because he said that there was a series of these hieroglyphics on the wall, and this is his sketch on the top left of what those hieroglyphics actually looked like. Pretty amazing stuff. And again, I don't know how much of this is from his memory or how much of this is just him basing it on things he saw online, but you can clearly see some of it looks Egyptian, some of it looks Mayan, like the one on the top right, and then on the middle row on the left, and then some of it doesn't look like anything we're familiar with, and then on the bottom row, some of those look like some of the classic runes, which again is very Celtic. Now, on the bottom, you have this star pattern, which appears to be a map showing where these people came from, and that is what they believe. But most provocative of all was that on each of these swinging doors, and you can actually see that he's mapping out the door here, because notice the rectangle in the middle, that there's a black line on the top and there's a black line on the bottom. You see that? Those are the hinges for the door. So when you see this door, this is the shape that you see. You see this symbol, which is, of course, what the Germans then borrowed for their original black sun symbol, which was then later co-opted into the swastika or swastika. So it would make sense, let's go back to camera now, it would make sense that if the Germans saw this amazing architecture under the ice in Antarctica, and they're looking at these doors that you can push open with your finger, that they see these symbols on the door, that they would be very amazed by this, and they would want to co-opt that and believe that it had magical power. And so the earliest societies, the Vril Society, the Thule Society, they used this symbol. So that does not appear to be an accident. They probably got it from this architecture. We don't really know when the Germans actually first discovered this. It's anybody's guess. But this is very, very interesting. And again, here is another version of the same illustration where you're seeing what it looks like in the main hall. And another thing that I found was really hilarious in terms of the universe giving you little signs. And I like to get synchronicity, right? So when I went and watched this video, look at the number of views that it had. 66266. 66,266 views. Now, David, what are you trying to say there exactly? Let's go back to camera. I'm trying to say 666. Well, here's why. Because we've been talking about the ruins under the ice in Antarctica for a long time. And with my work with Corey Good, over years now, we've been describing that we know who crashed there and where they came from, that this was a civilization that originated on a super Earth in our solar system that was much larger than Earth. They were taller and bigger than us. Notice that these hallways are built for very tall people, right? And that these people were at various times called things like the progenitors. But what they ended up doing is they blew up their home planet and created the asteroid belt. And so one of the code words that I'd heard from various insiders was called brilliant pebbles. And this is a code term for a project where they reverse engineered the asteroids and figured out that it was originally a planet, which was done, by the way, the same thing was done by Dr. Tom. Ooh, wow. See, this is why when you're live, you have no time to... I'll think of it in a second. I think it's Flanagan or... Tom Van Flandern, of course, Tom Van Flandern. And he had the EPH, or the Exploded Planet Hypothesis, right? And in the Exploded Planet Hypothesis, what he's talking about is that you can crank all the asteroids back to a single point of origin, that the comets appear to be the ocean of this planet that was frozen into the dirty snowballs that are made of water ice, that all the different trajectories of comets trace back to a point of origin. So this apparently was a planet, and that Mars was a captured moon, captured satellite, which apparently also was Earth-like. You have an Earth-like watery planet and an Earth-like watery moon in gravitational orbit. There was one civilization apparently on the big planet, and then there was another civilization on Mars that was a different civilization, and they warred with each other. The planet ends up blowing up. The debris hits Mars, destroys Mars, and it totally messes up the solar system. This catastrophe, according to multiple insiders, and I've checked this out with various different people who have vetted out, happened 500,000 years ago, 500,000 years ago. But even before that, apparently, these people had already started colonizing the Earth, and specifically Antarctica. Because remember I talked to you about that ancient builder race, that there was a group that had put pyramids and obelisks made of this transparent aluminum material all over our solar system and neighboring solar systems? Well, they have one here on Earth. It's a big, giant pyramid, much bigger than the one in Giza, but it's literally in Antarctica. So these people had already been developing down in Antarctica, but when their planet blew up, they ended up crash landing with a mothership in Antarctica, and that mothership actually became their home base. And they cannibalized the ship and used it to build out a civilization, a city there. So this is part of what we have down there. And then other groups that were refugees from the same destroyed civilization had other wars, and they came to Earth later on and crash-landed in Antarctica again after there had been pole shifts. So this is where Linda and I are getting different information. She's looking at conventional geology, saying 34, 33 million years ago is when the ice showed up. But we're hearing that it actually happened much more recently, that Antarctica is Atlantis. The fabled island of Atlantis is Antarctica, but the Earth shifted on its axis, and it flooded first, and then it froze. And there's a lot of evidence. Go back and watch my YouTube video, The Antarctic Atlantis. That is a classic for talking about this. Now I want to go back to our Word document to round that up. So let's just do that for a second. Cut back to the... Okay, here we go. So, she said, Linda said, you're coming in submarines to a specific point, and you see an alien structure 2 miles down in the ice. That's what he was saying. And he described that as of 2003, the only access point they knew of was from McMurdo, which was by land, which we just saw. Since that time, they have discovered several other portals 2 miles down that you can get into by submarine. And then she asks, does anyone describe what happens when you get out of the sub? He said, it's almost like a traditional landing dock for a submarine, like for actually a craft. There's no decompression when you get out whatsoever. The outside pressure is the same as the inside. When you walk into certain rooms, the light turns on, walls and ceilings begin to glow. There's also strange sounds, like a faint recording from a bygone era, but we cannot find where the recording is coming from. It sounds like a recording from a long time ago. Our people here on Earth have recorded the sounds. They do not know what it sounds like. There are at least 7 different species of ETs that the Coalition is in contact with, anywhere from warlike to very peaceful. Okay, back to camera. So now I want to ask this guy, if I ever get the chance to talk to him, I'm going to say, what was this recording? Is it music? Is it weird music? Is it somebody talking? Is it a weird voice? Do we know what language it is? Does it sound like any languages on Earth? There's so many questions that I have, and I'm sorry that I don't have the answers for you right now. This is just what we're hearing from this individual, okay? But it's really, really fascinating stuff because it correlates so well. Let me give you another really interesting anecdote here. I was taping with Emery Smith and Corey Good together when we did those classic episodes where the three of us were all talking for Cosmic Disclosure on Gaia. And one of the days that we were there, we had a military security guard assigned to us. And he didn't know anything about who we were at all, okay? But he described, he was really freaked out when we started talking about Antarctica, because he had been to Antarctica on a secret military mission where they were getting radio interference. What he said was they were getting radio interference and they didn't know why. It was interfering with planes and communication systems. So they went down there to figure out what it was. He was part of a team where they had identified that there was a hole in the ice and that there was a cave that you could go into. He was actually one of the people who rappelled down a rope and went spelunking into this cave. He himself personally witnessed ruins inside that cave that looked like something you would see from an ancient stone structure here on Earth. And so I deliberately knew already what I was expecting to hear. So I asked him a question that I knew was wrong. I said, did this look like the pyramids in Egypt? Now, if he was lying, he would have jumped right on that. He said, no, it actually looked more like those structures you find in Peru. And I said, I knew you were going to say that because the other insiders I've spoken to who also have seen these things say that is exactly what it looks like, similar to this one place called Pumapunku. So this was totally amazing. We have lost track of this guy. He did not want to come forward at all. He was very traumatized. After he saw this, he did not feel good. He said, whatever this thing is, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be seeing this. We all were sworn to silence. We said, this is not cool. We don't want to be in possession of this information. It's very, very dangerous. So he did not want to come forward. But now we have Linda with not one, but 2 individuals, Spartan 1 and Spartan 2, saying that they saw the same thing. All right. So are you enjoying this? I hope you are. And this is, how long have we been going on for? Let me take a look.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
1 hour and 30 minutes.
All right, 90 minutes. So we got some time. I, again, didn't want to exceed 2 hours. Let's go back now to my notes from Linda's thing, because this is so amazing. So now we're getting back into the secret space program part. He said we do have one. 7 different species of ETs. Obviously, I've heard more than that from various insiders. And she said, have you asked which are the ones that want to destroy most of the people on Earth? He said, I have, but the insiders would not give me an answer. What do your people say to you if you ask? He said, the ones I got to talk to who did know something said, you really don't want to know. He said he did want to know, the insider said, but they would never tell him. I think there's a hidden agenda. I believe even though we are destroying this planet, that this planet has certain resources that the aliens want. He said he is no longer in active duty, and he does want to find the species who do want to work with us and help us. Now, let's just talk about this one little piece of the puzzle here that he gave us, which is very interesting. Namely, that there is a very evil type of group of extraterrestrials that wants to conquer and dominate the planet, And the military insiders told him, you don't want to know about these beings. They are horrible. It's just crazy. Okay, so this is very contentious, but we have Pete Peterson who calls them the Saurians or the Draco. We have William Tompkins who calls them the Draco. I heard about this from Henry Deacon. I heard about this from Jacob. Actually, Daniel had encounters with reptilians, so not a big deal. When you get on the inside, you find out that this group exists, and there's different names for them. Even, in fact, when you go back to the infamous Carlos Allende notes, where the classic book on extraterrestrials and UFOs was sent back to this man, Carlos Allende, with notes in it from the government, apparently, the military, that there was lots of references to LM and SM, and we now have figured out that LM appears to be little men and SM appears to be Saurian men, referring to these reptilians. So they knew about this stuff back during World War II. According to William Tompkins, the reptilians are a known factor, they're a big problem, they're a big pain in the butt, and part of what we are doing now, we as the Alliance, in the space side of things, is fighting a war against these reptilians. There was cooperation in the past, now that has completely broken down, and we are winning the war in space, actually, from what I've been hearing. And so this is a very interesting thing that many different insiders have told me. Let me just go back to these slides and make sure I didn't miss anything. So let's just take a look and make sure there isn't anything else in here. Okay. So he said, oh yeah, this is great. Look at this part, guys. I believe Antarctica is the central crossing hub of this ET coalition. They also think Egypt is another place where this coalition has been at. There are lots of things in Egypt older than we have ever been told. The Sphinx is over 35,000 years old, according to various Egyptologists and archaeologists he spoke to from Cairo University. And he said that we were in the process of extracting an individual from Cairo, a nuclear physicist who had escaped from Iran to Egypt itself. We were to go in, extract him from Cairo, bring him to the United States. This professor or archaeologist works now for the coalition, and this is the guy that was in there writing down all the inscriptions, taking photographs, and did not want to leave, apparently. Found out that in the last 2 years alone, he has dated some of the largest structures, not only the Sphinx, but there are hidden pyramids we don't know about, over 35,000 years old, two outside the Valley of the Kings, now either covered by sand or covered up a long time ago, not only by humans, but by ETs. Okay, let's stop there for a second. This is something that the insider, who we call Bruce, told me about extensively, which is that the whole Sahara Desert in the northern part of Africa was originally a very advanced civilization, and as I've been telling you, if you've been watching my videos over the years, you dig down between 40 and 400 feet down, and what do you find down there? You find all kinds of wonderful ruins. And that the area of Egypt has a lot more stuff underground that's a lot older than what's on the surface. So here's a guy totally confirming that exact same thing. It's totally mind-blowing that they found other pyramids underground they're not telling us about. There's so much stuff. In fact, I have another insider who I've never mentioned to you before using a code name. I'm going to call him Uncle. He's completely different. You've never heard about him before. Uncle was working for DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and he's given me extensive briefings on when he went into a mission in Afghanistan, and they had warehouses full of weird extraterrestrial ancient technology half embedded in rock, just sitting in these warehouses, these weird things that are all metallic, very futuristic looking, stuck in rock, and that this is why we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan, because in both places they had these embedded old technologies stuck in rock, just sitting there in warehouses, not doing anything. And so after 9/11, U.S. soldiers went in, and that's part of what he was involved in, to Iraq and Afghanistan and seized a lot of this stuff, and probably seized all of it. And so much of it is in the Vatican. In the Vatican Library is one of the things that we keep hearing. But anyway, let's go back now to the slide once more and get to the final stage of what he's got to say here. So this validated everything we've thought perfectly. So she asks him, when the pyramids work together, there's a global communication and energy. And he said the pyramids that his insider, the military guy we're talking to, his insider said that he believed these pyramids were some type of engine. So then, in the second video here, Spartan 1 has a new colleague from the U.S. Marine Corps calling himself Spartan 2, and he's the one that introduced Linda to Spartan 1 in the first place. He first contacted Linda on March 22, 2017 in an email and said, "Antarctica contains wonders beyond what most can comprehend. It has ties to space and technology beyond belief." Well, she took that clue, followed through on it, and got some amazing, amazing stuff to happen. So this individual said he's worked with senior intelligence officials over the past decade. One is in cyber command related to space. That commander of what is called Fleet Cyber Command serves as the U.S. Navy Central Operational Authority for U.S. Navy Networks and Space Operations. Now, Spartan 2 says that according to one U.S. Navy cyberspace official, the United States has communicated beyond our solar system with advanced humanoid intelligences. Communications even allegedly include interstellar trade that's being kept secret from the public and the media. The cyberspace official told Spartan 1 and 2 that in the fall of 2017, an elongated object described by astronomers to be the first interstellar traveler in our solar system to be seen by human eyes, first noticed by an astronomer in Hawaii, headed toward our sun. That's how it got the name Oumuamua, the Hawaiian name for a scout or a leader in a battle out front. 8 months later, by the end of June 2018, this is Linda talking now, the highly respected science journal Nature published an analysis of the strange interstellar object's unexplained change in speed from 57,000 to 97,200 miles an hour. The astounding acceleration was after the interstellar object took a mysterious hairpin turn, heading out of our solar system after its closest approach to our sun on September 9th. Now, before we go any further, let's go back to camera for a sec. They also said that the NSA has a division in which they are directly responsible for trade with extraterrestrials, that there is a whole floor of the Cyber Command. My notes were a little bit spotty on that. A whole floor in the NSA just dedicated to maintaining these trade relationships. So if this is true, then we could very well be on brink of some totally amazing disclosure. And then what's so mind-blowing is that they're saying that they landed on Oumuamua and actually found out that it was an ancient derelict ship. But I want to read it from my notes. Let's continue. So a year later, by November 2018, and she shows a link for this, so please go watch her video. Earth Files is the channel on YouTube. The chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department, Professor Avi Abraham Loeb, co-wrote a paper about Oumuamua's peculiar acceleration, hypothesizing that it might be a fully operational probe sent intentionally to our proximity by an alien civilization. Spartan 1 and Spartan 2 say they have been told by a Cyber Command space official that Oumuamua was, quote, an old derelict ship, unquote, from someplace else in the universe. Then there's a quote from Spartan 2, the second insider, and he says, yeah, there was one point when he wasn't vocoded, which is probably not a good thing, but it did happen. I just noted that. I forgot to get that out of there. We did get confirmation that our buddies landed on Oumuamua, like months before anybody even knew it was out there. Our guys were on Oumuamua, or whatever the hell we call the thing. It's not a rock. It's an old derelict ship. At least that's what they told us. And we boarded it months before anybody ever talked about it. And she says, oh, you're talking about Oumuamua, because they were pronouncing it differently. And he said, that's it, yeah. And unfortunately, she forgot to vocode him right there, which everybody's going to pick up on that. Are you saying that you have firsthand information that this was an old craft? He says, yes, ma'am. From who? I can only tell you his first name is Ken. He worked for NSA. He's worked for NSA for years. Just recently in the last year, he was put in charge of a certain department in Cyber Command. It's on the 8th floor of the NSA building. And she said, what's the floor called? He said, it's a part of Cyber Command. As far as the public knowledge, it doesn't exist. It is not what the general public has been told. She asks, is this probe interstellar? He says, yes, ma'am. And she says, so this is an interstellar trade group in the NSA? And he said, yes, it's like a communication department. Then she asks, so Ken, on the 8th floor of the NSA, but it's really interstellar trade, Oumuamua, he said, was an old spacecraft? And he says, yes. And then she talks about the star map that dissolves into an ancient black sun pattern carved on the huge 18-foot black basalt door. And then he also says, and this is the real bombshell, that they found similar structures in Antarctica on the backside of the moon and in the Cydonia region of Mars. Okay. So this is where things are really, really heating up for me, because I did a show at Conscious Life Expo, I guess it was last year that we ran through this, where we talked about Oumuamua, and I was up there with Corey Good, and I have these slides, and this begins, the story begins in December 2017. So I'm going to run through a few of these slides again, just because this is so amazing and I wanted to document this literally the day after I learned about it. So check it out. December 2017. Okay. This is where our story begins, because this is when Oumuamua was discovered. It was announced around December 13th, as you see here, the first known interstellar object to pass through our solar system. And if you want to just grab me a glass of water, I'm just going to be on slides for a minute, so that's a good gap, so we can keep this train a-rolling, and I don't lose my voice like I did last time. So it says, the strange tumbling motion of the cigar-shaped interstellar comet Oumuamua suggests it's an alien probe with broken engines, according to a leading astronomer. This is very compelling disclosure. And the word means a messenger from afar arriving first, and even Stephen Hawking, who was still alive at the time, this is January 2018, believes that this cigar-shaped object is artificial, likely some kind of extraterrestrial technology, not from here. Now, according to what Corey Good got from his own insiders, completely apart from this thing that Linda Moulton Howe just told us, that the secret space program did go out and land on this probe, and that they found a hatch and they were able to get inside. And so this is a piece of art illustrating the ship and what that ship actually looks like, apparently, that they used in order to get inside. So then it says here that they found a technological wonderland estimated to be over a billion years old, which they believe came from the ancient builder race. That's a very important point. So the ancient builder race, as I said, is estimated to be over 2 billion years old. They have found these ruins all throughout our solar system and elsewhere. Some of them are here on Earth, but we know nothing about the history except that with some kind of very advanced technology, they estimate that it's 2 billion years old. And this actually ties in with the Law of One series, which again, if you follow my work, I've been very into this stuff called the raw material. I talked about it in previous episodes of our live show here. These people that wrote the Law of One, this alleged extraterrestrial intelligence calling itself Ra, claims that it was from Venus. And Corey appears to have received contact with these people showing up as the Blue Avians, and we've been through all that. You've probably seen videos on this. If you haven't, there's a lot of things you can go and watch. Videos where Corey and I are talking, such as the Antarctic Atlantis is a great example. Go look that video up, and you'll see this backstory in case this is new to you. Anyway, these beings that allegedly contacted Corey did tell him, we are the messengers and the facilitators of the One Infinite Creator, and it appears these people did write the Law of One. It's all interconnected. So Corey, if you believe the stories, and I actually do, as far-fetched as they seem, it does appear he's telling the truth, that he got a message saying he would prepare for a meeting with the Secret Space Program Alliance at Lunar Operations Command. This is an alleged base on the moon, one of a few that he would go to when he would have these meetings. And this was the first meeting he had with this alliance after they had gone dark because of this information that one of his contacts named Sigmund had extracted. And he was made to feel responsible for the deaths of two respected alliance members, as well as outing a few more. This was a very sad thing. If you were following the story back then, Corey was kidnapped and he was drugged and interrogated, and under drug influence, he outed the names of certain people by, they had a pad that they were showing him people's faces, and his retinas would change on certain images, and that's how they knew these people were in this Secret Space Program Alliance. So apparently, the Secret Space Program Alliance is a group that wants all of their technology, all the relationships with extraterrestrials, the portal technology, the anti-gravity, the free energy, the health technology, printing food from basically nothing in these food machines that they have. They can manifest, materialize anything they want to materialize. They want us to have all that stuff. And up until now, Corey is the only person I'm aware of who has been contacted by this Secret Space Program Alliance. And those people do, to a degree, some of them are able to actually monitor our internet. They know what's going on here. Some of them actually do come and go from the Earth, but they've been hiding undercover within this greater secret space program, the same one that Linda's insiders are talking about. So let's go on with the slide. So this is the DART craft that Corey would get picked up in. About 2 a.m., he got in his car, in this case, drove to a specified location he was told to. He saw a white orb in the sky that was very bright descending in his direction. And in its place was a DART craft he was familiar with from his previous trips to the moon, or the Lunar Operations Command. And that on the left is what it looks like. It's a levitating anti-gravity craft. So you'll notice that this is a swastika type of building. The early German version of their first base was built in a swastika shape, and then they expanded it. And Corey said that once the masking technology around this base was deactivated, he could see this base spread out with green, red, and white flashing lights on the structures. So this is an animation now of the original base and the DART going in, which is pretty cool. You know, a lot of work went into this. So now you're seeing the approach, and you would go in through a little hole like that, a crater. When you go into the lava tube, this is the hangar that you see. You would see the rest of the bell-shaped structure that went down to the floor of the cavern, and you can see a little tiny yellow thing saying the DART craft. That's how small it is. And then up at the top where it says entrance, that's the hole. So you'd fly in through this hole, and then you would be able to dock down there at the bottom on the left is where the dock is located. You would park the ship there. The whole thing inside is like kind of a bell shape, apparently. And so this is where he would visit. And when he was there, he was met by Gonzalez, one of his insiders, wearing an Air Force uniform. Gonzalez is a key figure if you've been following this story. They went down a few flights of stairs and then to a smaller elevator where there was a young female standing in a similar uniform. And they took them in the elevator and then ran a card through a card reader, placing her hand under an RF scanner. And Gonzalez and Corey were taken into a conference room, a handful of people sitting around a conference table. Some of the SSP Alliance members were present, and this is Sigmund on the right. That's what he looks like. And he was sitting there, and he was smirking. Sigmund yelled, "I lost everything," and pointed his finger at Corey's face. He was a very snappy guy. And Gonzalez then gave a detailed and classified report about his time with a series of other beings he was visiting with the Mayans. Now, the reason why Sigmund yelled that he lost everything was that Sigmund was part of a more open group, still very secret, but which we decided to call the MIC, or Military Industrial Complex Secret Space Program. Now, the MIC group was apparently much more terrestrial. They knew about that there were a couple little outposts in our solar system. They had ships that could travel throughout the solar system. They knew about the ancient builder race. They found the ancient glass-like ruins, but they didn't know that we had any greater secret space program. And apparently this was built for a limited partial disclosure, that we get just the MIC part, and Sigmund was supposed to be the point man for that. I'm very sad to report that Sigmund has died. Corey only got this information very recently, so that is an update to the story. So he's not going to be the point man like he was supposed to be. But what happened is, because Sigmund was tasked, and he was told that this was going to happen, telling the world about the ruins under the ice in Antarctica, that there's a big mothership down there, that there was an ancient civilization, that they found ruins on Mars, ruins on the moon, but that they really haven't been very much farther. They can't go out of our solar system, so he was told. He investigated Corey, abducted Corey, because Corey is talking about a lot of stuff that sounds very different than what Sigmund was saying. Now, Sigmund apparently took hair samples from Corey, and from those hair samples determined that Corey had been to various off-planet locations that he knew about. So Sigmund got himself in a lot of trouble, and ultimately the Secret Space Program Alliance had to bring him in because he was going to be killed, and that's why he was yelling that he had lost everything. He got brought into a much greater secret space program, And he thought he knew everything, but he didn't know anything. So this stuff is very compartmentalized. Nobody really knows the whole story. That's one of the big problems. So Gonzalez gave this detailed classified report, let's go back to the slide, about his time with a series of other beings he was visiting with the Mayans. Sigmund's upset because he lost everything, but now he's part of this greater secret space program alliance. So this is an enhancement of some of these beings showing up, like at the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's just theoretical of who they might have been, where there were recent meetings, Corey is saying, with the Sphere Being Alliance, the Anshar, which is a group of people inside the Earth, supposedly, and the Super Federation, which is a group of various ETs that work together as they've been dealing with humanity on Earth for many millions of years. And Sigmund apparently said that he was shown a video of the first time Corey was brought to the moon for the Lunar Operation Command meeting. He saw the big blue birds appear behind Corey. Everyone did, but he just didn't believe it. This is hard for a lot of people. The blue avian thing is very difficult. But Sigmund did assert that he thought the Nordics were screwing around with our heads again. And he didn't think that there was anybody else out there but the Nordics, as you see here on the right. That the blue birds were not real, that he thinks that they were a hologram from the Nordics. So that was his opinion. Who knows what's really true? We're not really sure. So this DIA partial disclosure, the DIA and the Air Force determined they needed to disclose certain information in a way that couldn't be directly tied to UFOlogy. They planned on making their disclosure nuts and bolts that would leave out even the most pragmatic UFO researchers. Nobody gets to participate except for the chosen ones. So now we get to this part of the meeting where Sigmund then stands up and says, I have a treat for the both of you. This is Gonzalez and Corey. The ship was monitored as it approached the area where the barrier was erected by the SBA. Now this takes some explanation. Let's cut to camera. One of the things that Corey has told us is that there was this big sphere that was created around our solar system. Nobody could get in, nobody could get out. And that apparently has trapped the Draco because they are expecting some kind of solar flash. And apparently when the solar flash happens, the Draco will be incinerated. I know it sounds like a very complex sci-fi movie. This is all the kinds of stuff that you would be hearing if you'd been following this in my other articles, videos, Cosmic Disclosure, etc., etc. That there was an outer barrier. It's energetic. It's like a giant sphere, but you can't get through it. But so people were wondering, as they saw this thing that clearly appears to be a craft coming towards the barrier, would it be allowed through? And apparently it was. It actually went through the barrier. Now let's go back. The SSP expected the craft to crash into the barrier, but it had already been depleted by then, but they had no idea what was going to happen. Gonzalez stated that he led an expedition to see who this craft belonged to and wait until you hear what we found. They were shown a video that the SSP craft, where it was docking with the ancient builder race ship, and it was obviously made of stone, this Oumuamua, and looked as if it had been through many meteor showers and collisions. So this is the artistic rendition that we had of Oumuamua, and this is the animation that was created of the ship coming in and docking. So you see the approach of the secret space program craft. And again, this was publicly displayed approximately 1 year ago, right around 1 year ago is when we went public with this, and we were on the same stage together. So the ship is coming in now, and you can see it's docking on this very, very old object. It's organic. And then I believe that the animation continues here. Yeah, it's still coming in. You see it's very sleek. It's an anti-gravity craft. And they had to just touch the tip to the edge of the object because you can't land the whole thing on there, but they were able to match the spin and be able to have everybody disembark and actually enter into this ship. And so this is really, really cool stuff. So I'll go ahead and stick some animations on that just so we have a chance. You guys get a little backstage pass here on how this stuff works. We put some flash bulbs in there, and then we got to do it by bullet. All right, good enough. I'm happy. Are you happy? Good. Okay. So people were suited up in space suits, and they pushed themselves through what looked like a bored-out hole going down inside the ship. You could see the men in a weightless environment with lights on their chests, helmets, and the top of their wrists. The ship was obviously very ancient and had been boarded and stripped of technology many times by unknown races. There was an icy brown sludge throughout the ship that they later determined was the remains of the original crew. Ugh, that's gross, right? There were many panels removed from walls, the ceilings, and floors, leaving empty compartments where technology was once located. Two men taking video and photos of some beings that were located when morgue-like drawers had been pulled open. On the table was the frozen stiff body of a strange-looking being, almost like a pterodactyl, with skin that was pale blue, almost white in color. We don't have an illustration of that one. They pulled open other drawers and saw a few other types of beings. One looked orange or peach-colored and appeared to be mammalian. So this is an example of art that Corey had commissioned of one of the aquatic beings that he was shown in the briefings that was found inside this ship. This is a being that would swim in water, and they weren't very careful, which is pretty sad, actually, as they pulled the drawers open and these beings were seen, they just kind of crumbled apart. And so it wasn't really done with the greatest sense of historical preservation. They bagged up the bodies and transported them to the ship. We can only date the organics back to a little under a billion years ago and tracked its trajectory to a star system not too far away. This craft was apparently stuck in our solar system's orbit around it for millions of years before we finally pulled it in, and it actually crashed into the solar system instead of just going around. The camera showed them entering into a room where there were two types of writing and glyphs on the walls and ceilings. This was the first time we'd ever seen or had access to any type of writing from this 2-billion-year-old ancient builder race, because everything else they had was scratched out. When we find these ruins around the solar system, it's all been erased. These intricate hieroglyphs had characters made of long lines, dashes, and dots. Now, this is different than the one that's in Antarctica. That's much, much more recent. This is much more ancient, 2 billion years ago. Similar ancient languages were found on Earth and a few other stars in our local neighborhood. It was determined that the hieroglyphs were a mixture of a language and a hyperdimensional mathematics. And they were able to interpret most of the messages from the craft and have sent the results to a few of their research groups. And then Corey got to go on this amazing tour of the Lunar Operations Command. LOC Bravo is another one of the bases they have. He was taken to a larger elevator on the floor of the LOC, rode it down, and arrived at a larger shuttlecraft, which then flew out of the bay, came out into another large cavern area where he saw human-made structures on the floor of the cavern that were built around an opening. And this was quite stunning in the way he described it. And there's going to be a lot more coming out about this in the future, we hope, because apparently we're going to get to see this as humanity as a whole. We first flew up to a small facility that looked like it may rise up to the lunar surface with structures built above ground, like on the Lunar Operation Command. Men and a few women were walking around the facility in both Air Force uniforms and NASA uniforms, believe it or not. We were greeted by a few PhD types who told us we would be suited up and transported down to the Great Hall. We then went through a bit of basic training on how to use the equipment. Everyone was loaded up on the same shuttle, traversed through a dugout hole, which opened into a cavernous area. There were all sorts of huge ancient machines that had tractor tracks on them. They were red in color, and they literally looked like gigantic mining tractors on the moon. There were also long beams made of a gray crystalline material that was broken and shattered on the ground. Let's go back to camera. So this appears to be the mining equipment and the actual fabrication equipment from the ancient builder race used to build transparent aluminum, apparently from mining the regolith that was on the moon's surface. So it was so fascinating to hear that we might get to see this, because Sigmund said that this was going to be shown to all of us in the future, that this will be part of the disclosure, that we get to see this 2-billion-year-old stuff on the moon. And obviously, for Corey, getting to tour it in person, getting to see it in person, is very, very amazing. Let's continue with the slide. Large circular tunnels headed out in multiple directions. All of this we did, again, last year on stage at Conscious Life. I told Gonzalez I had never seen anything like it. Sigmund looked over at me and said, "Corey, you have been here before, but you just don't remember." Apparently, he was mind-wiped. And Sigmund said, "One day in the not-too-far future, I will be standing here with a reporter from a major television network." And Corey was then taken on an amazing tour of additional sites, which he has apparently been taken on before, but he doesn't remember what it was. Oops, let's fix that one again. There, you guys are learning how to use Keynote at the same time that you're seeing me do this talk. We boarded an underground train and toured the giant ancient facilities for nearly 5 hours, and Corey's not allowed to talk about this, although I do remember him saying that it's the interior of the moon, some of the stuff inside the moon that he got to see. Very interesting. The ancient builder race apparently left crystalline domes, pyramids, obelisks, and underground cities all throughout our solar system. We said that. And we were then taken back to Lunar Operation Command, where we both boarded separate dart craft and were flown back to our home destinations. Okay, so wow, that is a lot of information to take in. So you can imagine the total shock that I have. You know, we never made a video out of this. That's why I'm doing this now. These slides are obviously still great. I can still use them. We did this show back at the expo, but we never produced it and made a YouTube video out of it. So you might not have seen this before. In fact, really only the people in the audience actually got to see this, and it was maybe 600, I would guess. That's about how many can fit in the room. And then it gets to be too much. So it is so amazing for me to have Linda Moulton Howe bringing out witnesses who are saying they saw these ruins in Antarctica, saying that there are similar glyphs on the moon and on Mars, saying that we have a secret space program, that there is a floor in the NSA where they are actively engaged in trade with extraterrestrials, and bonus, these guys are saying that they went to Oumuamua, that we landed on it, and that we got back inside. So just so there's no confusion, I'm going to take you back to the transcript that I just made from Linda Moulton Howe's appearance so you can see how beautifully this fits together. It's so amazing. Check it out. So what we see here... Yeah, so it's all down here. She's setting up Oumuamua here. And then Spartan 1, Spartan 2 say they have been told by a Cyber Command space official that Oumuamua was, quote, an old derelict ship from somewhere else in the universe. And then he says here, we did get confirmation that our buddies landed on Oumuamua months before anybody knew it was there. It's not a rock. It's an old derelict ship. At least that's what they told us. And we boarded it months before anybody ever talked about it. Are you saying you have first-hand information this was an old craft? Yes, ma'am. His first name is Ken. That's the guy that told him this, right? And he worked for NSA. And he was put in charge of this department on the 8th floor of the NSA building. Okay. So, let's go back to our final slide here. So we have some animation to cut back to when we need it. Look, guys. This is not staged. I only learned about this and talked to Linda yesterday, and then last night I watched the videos. That's why I was a half an hour late getting started, and I am truly sorry about that. I'm sorry that you guys had to sit on your hands waiting for me to get my crap together, but I have been working nonstop because I knew we had our slot for Saturday at 4 p.m., and this stuff is so amazing. What time are we at, by the way? How long have we been running? 2 hours. Okay, so we're at the 2 hour point, which I didn't know it was going to take so long to get through this material. But so let me just quickly go back through some of the other stuff that we were going to talk about, okay, and try to expand the scope on this a little bit more so that you don't get shafted if you came here thinking you're going to hear about ascension. Let me just segue into that because there's some transitional material that I think is very important. First of all, the QAnon briefings are going way out of their way to make it obvious that this is coming from the presidential administration itself. They have done so many things where they tweet from the president and then they put something on Q at the same time, and they're trying to get the delta, meaning the difference between the posting time, down to like zero, but they can't quite do it, and they just talked about that in Q recently. In addition, they are showing you over and over again various forms of proof that this is really what's going on. Air Force One actually changed its call sign to Q0, and the zero on the keypad of a telephone is also where the plus character is. Q plus apparently is the president himself, so when you see a post on Q that says Q plus, that's actually the president. Now, there's another really interesting thing where Trump Hotels came out with a video advertising their hotels for Christmas, but then there's all these little Easter eggs inside the video showing the Q phenomenon in action, including the fact that one of the stockings has a Q on it. And I have that all getting ready for my article. And I'm sorry that it's taken me so long to get this article written. I'm still working on it. All that stuff is going to be in there. But one of the things that really amazed me, it was around September 19th that we got this post on the Q boards saying that there are secret space programs. And knowing that they've gone so far out of their way to tell us that this really is the alliance, that it really is coming from the current administration, whether you love them or hate them, okay, they do appear to be working to get disclosure. There do appear to be tribunals already underway. These are all some of the things that we're hearing now. It's very, very exciting stuff, what's going on. It's history in the making. This is the most historic time that we have ever been in. And so when QAnon said that Roswell was real, that there are secret space programs, that captures my attention. Now, another thing you may have noticed if you're a very astute Q observer is that they are very pro-NSA. Apparently, the alliance has gotten control of the NSA. And so one of the strange things that you see in Q that might not make sense to you is that they say Edward Snowden is a traitor. They're really anti-Snowden. And apparently, the deep state guys no longer have control of the levers for the NSA. So this is pretty wild because, wait a minute, now we got Linda Bolton Howe just recently, just yesterday basically, the day before, coming out with a live video right before this conference that she's going to be speaking at and is speaking at, saying that there's this eighth floor in the NSA where they're literally involved in managing the trade with multiple extraterrestrial groups, as in commerce, as in technology exchange, probably getting bodies like the ones that Emery Smith was working on in the autopsy room. The pieces fit together so well. And you also had this Orion space capsule literally planted on the White House lawn, looking like the proverbial UFO landing on the White House lawn. That amazes me. That was in my article from, I guess, October is when I wrote it up. Go back to divinecosmos.com, click on David's blog, and you'll see it come up there. It's still on the sidebar. It's had a massive number of views where I was talking about this particular secret space program disclosure from Q, which of course led to all kinds of flaming and hatred against me on the Q boards. So we have a number of insiders telling us that Q is the real deal, that it is the alliance, that the arrests are real, the tribunals are real. This is happening now. And there is a massive push from the mainstream media to try to discredit Q, as you see if you read the most recent stuff. And the best site that I go to is QAnon.pub. That's QAnon.pub. If you want to jump in and get involved in this and read this stuff, it's going to blow your mind. Another thing, if you haven't already seen it, I cannot possibly recommend highly enough, go watch Edge of Wonder. That is a YouTube channel with Ben and Rob, two great guys who are truly patriotic and they're fighting for humanity's future just like I am. I have done a series of interviews with them. There was a three-part series the first time, and now we're on another series. It's like five or six parts. Those videos are getting incredible numbers of views. Some of them are up to like a million almost. And then you look at the fact that I had 6 million videos about me on YouTube, and then I point it out to you guys, and then all of a sudden it goes down to 250,000? What the heck is going on? somebody wanted that to be silenced. That's what I think, and I'm not blaming anybody in Google. I don't think they have any idea. It's probably something that they had no knowledge of, and it's just this very, very strange thing. I talked to the guy who runs my network. He does a lot of alternative media. He says he's never seen anything like this before, because literally, how did a name like mine that's not even really that public become that big on YouTube? Well, it's because this story has legs. It's because this thing is very exciting. Everybody's talking about it. And the stuff that I have been telling you for so many years is coming true. And it is proving itself to be true time after time. So as these dark and evil individuals are being arrested, being put on trial, and being either incarcerated or receiving the death penalty, there are changes in the mass consciousness. And I've talked about this before in previous videos with you guys, how our mass consciousness, we can actually create a 72% reduction in crime, terrorism, and fatalities by simply doing a mass meditation. 7,000 people trained in meditation can bring that level down, where 3 out of 4 people in the whole world who would pick up a gun and shoot someone decide not to do that. Unbelievable stuff, right? So if that kind of effect is there, then what happens when large numbers of the top villains start to get arrested and start to get tried, and the whole deep state apparatus is being disentangled? But we are right on the brink of some very amazing stuff. So I do want to convey to you a couple of the briefings that the Alliance has asked to get out there that did make it in the queue. I didn't have time to put it in the slideshow. 3 days before Q made this announcement, I got the same thing. They are expecting that there could be a deep state false flag attack as big as 9/11 or bigger. So they are asking us, the Alliance is asking us, to please have 2 weeks of water, food, and heat supplies for your house already available. And if you watch my most recent Edge of Wonder video, I go into a lot more detail on that. But basically, all you have to do is get rice, millet, quinoa, grains like that, and then various types of beans, and you'll be fine, and get 5-gallon jugs of water, store them in your house unless you have good water purification. Make sure you have feminine hygiene products, make sure you have toilet paper, make sure you have wood or fuel to keep your house warm if you happen to lose electricity. We are thinking, possibly, that something like this could happen. Now, the briefings that we have gotten are that, first of all, the Alliance is going to try to keep these tribunals secret for 1 or 2 years because they can't get everybody at once. They have to do it in stages, okay? But we're also hearing that a lot of people could leak information and that the leaks could cause this thing to break out very quickly. You have Kim.com, who is directly tied into WikiLeaks, saying on January 5th, as I said in the Edge of Wonder videos, that get ready for monumental stuff this year, that the leaks of 2019 will dwarf anything they've ever done before, exposing the deep state, exposing mainstream media lies, exposing fake news, and it's going to be totally amazing. So if there's any insider who would be knowing what WikiLeaks is going to do, he would be it, okay? So we are on the verge of very stunning stuff. Now, another thing the Alliance did tell us is that if we do have a false flag event, that is when everything is no longer secret. They will immediately do what has to be done to tell the public the truth and to get the information out. Now, one of the things that we've heard again and again is that your cell phone has these national emergency alerts. This is if you're in America. And bear in mind, similar operations are being conducted throughout Europe and other countries as well. This is not strictly America. We get a lot of questions like that. This is a worldwide, covert, massive operation with full international support, just so that we're clear. It's not just America. You might get your phone making this crazy whining noise, the national emergency alert. They already did the presidential alert back in November. I was stunned when it happened because I'm expecting something. So you'll hear a noise coming off your phone, and it might actually start talking. And the talking could be the announcement of whatever it is that they want you to know. So make sure that your emergency alerts are turned on your phone, because crazy stuff could be happening. We could end up getting told about how the planet has been run by people who are way more crazy and evil than we thought, that they were woven in through military, media, corporations, the judiciary, local police, local government, state government. It's so big. And one of the things that I am so excited about that Q said, and again, I didn't have enough time to get all this into the slides, but Q recently said that they are not, it was February 15th, I believe, they are not going to let this stay secret. They are not, they want the whole thing to come out so it can never happen again. The whole deep, ugly truth has to be exposed. So now how does this relate to ascension, and how does this relate to the original topic that you might have thought you were going to get when you watched this video and you saw my emails? As I was talking about with mass consciousness, right, we're having this global consciousness activation that I believe is going on. And there's a whole lot of data that I've talked about way outside the scope of this video. The planets are getting hotter, brighter, and more magnetic. I've proven that with hundreds of references from NASA. It's every planet in the solar system and the sun is going through massive climate change. They're getting visibly brighter. We're seeing the magnetic fields go up. We're seeing all kinds of heat increases, ozone, activated oxygen, all that kind of stuff is going up. And I believe that this is because we are moving into a more energetic region of the galaxy, and there are even NASA scientists who have tracked that movement. They're moving into a very energetic and very hot cloud, which then appears to be heating up the solar system. Now, in my model, which again is way beyond what I can do in one video, that cloud appears to have intelligence qualities in it. That's raising our whole overall level of intelligence and our overall level of evolution. There is apparently an energetic component to how this stuff works, which is very, very significant. So that process is actually causing our DNA to upgrade. Dr. John Hawks, an anthropologist from, I believe, University of Wisconsin, has shown that the overall DNA molecule has changed by 7%. In just the last 5,000 years, which is totally amazing. It's a much faster speed of DNA evolution than anything we've ever seen before. And then we're seeing all kinds of other stuff. Changes in our IQ, which is the effect that was documented for the last 100 years. They have to keep normalizing the IQ scores, making it harder to get an average score of a 100 because people just get smarter and smarter and smarter. That's called the Flynn effect, named after the scientist who discovered it. So again, it's like it's kind of tough for me, having so much knowledge, so much work that I've done in my books, in my videos, in my shows, in my conferences for so many years, and it's so outside the normal paradigm that to try to explain to somebody who really hasn't done the months and months and months of work that it would take to really get up to date on all this stuff and actually survey. There's over 2,000 scientific references in my three books, guys. So this is not pseudoscience. This is not something that I just made up. This is very heavily documented that we are going through a consciousness shift. And I was told in dreams and other visionary states all the way back in the late 1990s that we would see this alliance pop up, that they were going to be doing arrests, and that this was all paving the way for a mass global awakening, where we learn all this crazy stuff, and now it's looking like we might even get secret space program knowledge, technology, that we might get a very sudden change in our society where all the stuff we were seeing in these movies becomes real. And now it's not science fiction anymore, it's science fact. And believe me, as far-fetched as that sounds right now, once our civilization enters into that world, we will barely remember what life was like before we had spaceships and off-planet travel and stargates and printed meals. It's going to become normal. It's going to become boring. You're going to be literally orbiting Jupiter and scanning through an iPad, looking at videos of ancient ruins, bored to tears, while you hit a button and print the meal that you want to have for dinner, and it's the greatest tasting food you've ever had in your life. That's the future that we're actually heading for. Now, on a spiritual level, we have to be prepared for this new reality because it's going to be very different, okay? So most of us, many of us, are going through very intense hardship right now. We are going through a global initiation predicted in so many ancient cultures. And that initiation causes us to suffer. We experience pain, we experience loss, we experience grief, we experience betrayal, sadness, humiliation. Life, many, many people are very economically impoverished right now. That's why I thank you so much for the super chats and for the help that you're doing here, because we do need your support. So I'm very grateful for all of that. And also, just as an aside, I did create a Patreon link. I will put it in the comment section. The reason why is that all these fake YouTube channels were making their own Patreon links and impersonating me. So there is one real one now, and it's patreon.com, patreon.com, /dwilcock. If you go to that, that actually is me, and I validated it with my Facebook, with my Twitter, with my Instagram, all the different social media things. So it actually is real, okay? I only put that there because people said I should. So you asked for it, and I gave it to you. But also the Super Chat is another great thing, too. So I want to thank you again very much for all of your support that way to keep us going, to keep us on the front lines for this. Now, I want to talk about another way that you could support us on a deeper level and get more committed to this process. And that is with the Ascension Mystery School. These videos that I've been doing are partly intended to set the precedent for this school that I am now launching. And we have a very preliminary beta version of the website already up there, which is ascensionmysteryschool.com. Now, when you go to this website, right now you're not going to see anything. It's just a placeholder. You can put your email in there to indicate that you might be interested in this class. It is a paid class. It costs the same as one of my conferences used to cost. So it's around $300. I think we set it at $333. And this is the same price that people used to pay to get to be with me all weekend. But what we're going to be doing is we're going to do a 5-week intensive. Now, the reason why I'm doing this is because there is certain material that is very spiritually high voltage stuff, not ready to be shared just on a mass level like this. The things that really separate the difference between the field goal version of Ascension versus the touchdown, which is the deep Tibetan stuff with the rainbow body activation, what the Law of One teaches about activating your higher centers, really getting in there, getting through your emotional blocks, getting through these various things. So I have outlined a very comprehensive 5-week class. We've hammered out the dents. It is going to be live. It's not going to be publicly available. It will be protected by Content ID. If anybody tries to steal it and upload it, you'll never be able to upload it because we're immediately putting it into our Content ID on YouTube. So this is only hidden behind a paywall. Now, again, on a certain level, I'm sorry that I have to do this, but we do have sheer economic necessity. That's part of why we're doing it. But also it's because there's some things that I want you to hear if you're ready for it that I'm not prepared to just talk about in a public forum like YouTube. People will not understand. They'll get all upset about it. They won't be able to handle it. But these are the deeper teachings, and they're positive, okay? There's nothing evil in there. It's positive stuff. But there are all kinds of quotations from the Law of One that I want to get into. I want to get into the dietary practices. I want to get into the philosophy. I want to go deeper than I usually do, because normally when I do talks, I either cover science or I cover secret space program, or I go into the deep state and the alliance and how they're fighting against each other. But this is a class where I really want to help you prepare for whatever this ascension thing is going to be, to understand the deeper spiritual dynamics of what's going on. So anyway, I don't want to spend too much time in what is technically an advertisement, but we are going to be launching this, and if you show up and if you give us your support, you are going to get an amazing, amazing program, stuff that I have never done before, stuff that will be live. You're going to get it week after week, the same time. I'm going to go on for 1 or 2 hours, maybe longer, who the heck knows. It's going to have nice production value, nice slides, and it will very much help us to make sure that we don't collapse as we're nearing the finish line of this epic battle. So, ascensionmysteryschool.com is the website. The class will be opening up soon. Pre-registration will begin. And it's just like any other conference. I've done many of these before, but I can reach a lot more of you. And you don't have to spend all the money in taking a flight and then booking a hotel and then having to go through the whole weekend of restaurant meals. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of good parts about it, having the community, and I am going to still do other events. I have the Sedona Cosmic Awakening Conference coming up in April. I've just signed on for New Living Expo. There was a lot of, I was wondering whether I was going to do that, but I did decide to do that, and I am going to do Contact in the Desert as well. So those are the only three that I'm involved in right now, but those are coming up, and that's a way that you could get in at a much lower cost if you want to see some of the stuff that I do and have the chance to be right there in the audience involved in this. And because history is in the making so quickly right now, we don't know what the heck is going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it is absolutely amazing. What is going on is civilization-defining stuff. Please go back and watch the Edge of Wonder videos, all of them with me in them. They are free, and there was another one that just came out the other day where we were talking about this weird proof that the Alliance appears to have gotten control of the weather modification satellites, and thus these wildfires, these programmed earthquakes, all that kind of junk appears to no longer be possible for the deep state to achieve. So we really don't know, but again, on the most simple level, apart from whatever classes I have or whatever things I've got going on, you do want to go out, you want to get that rice and beans, you want to get that water, you want to be ready for something, because it is, we don't know how this is going to shake down. It could be next week, it could be next year. We have heard that the Edge of Wonder videos have gotten a lot of chatter at high levels in the Alliance. They're very pleased with what we're doing. It is television quality stuff. It's really, really good. And congratulations to Ben and Rob for what they're doing. There's nothing else like it out there right now. And I want to thank you for your support, because when you share this video with people who you love, people who you trust, people who you want to inform, it might go way over their head. They might think this David Wilcott guy is crazy. But you're helping to get the word out, and you're helping to enhance the likelihood of success, because the Alliance are human beings. They don't really know what's going on here. Let's go back. Yeah. They don't really know what's going on. They don't. There's a morale problem in the Alliance, right? It's the plan will work, and they tell us trust the plan, but there's a lot of people on the foot soldier level who are not sure. There are literally hundreds of thousands of people deep undercover, covertly fighting for your freedom, because one of the things that's going to happen is that trillions of dollars that have been seized from the deep state will be repatriated into our economy. We will have a massive economic boom. We will rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. We will have all kinds of new jobs. And then if that happens with disclosure, I mean, hello, wouldn't you want to go to Antarctica? Wouldn't you want to be in that volcanic basalt building with the hieroglyphs? Wouldn't you want to know about this civilization? This is very, very exciting stuff. Yes, it's possible that the beings that built that were the so-called biblical fallen angels, that the Atlanteans were these beings with elongated skulls that then end up with the Egyptian pharaonic dynasties and in Mesoamerica with the elongated skulls. I've talked about this in other videos. So again, go back and watch Antarctic Atlantis. There's a much bigger story going on here. And I'm not saying that I'm supporting the deep state by talking about the Antarctic ruins. In fact, by exposing the fact that they wanted you to worship them by showing you this stuff in Antarctica, I'm saying don't worship them. Don't look at them as gods, but look at them as people who have a very interesting body of information. And we don't need to hate them either. I don't want to see us torturing and killing people just because they were involved in the secret society. Everybody deserves a trial by jury. Everybody deserves a fair chance. And if people become whistleblowers, if people become insiders, as I've said, then that goes a long way, because they are doing their part to try to bring this whole madness to an end. And that, by the way, includes many of the top bloodlines, where the younger people in the bloodlines, as the older ones die off, which is happening, they don't want to do things this way anymore. They want to see positive change as well. Everybody on Earth is pushing for things to become more positive, without this economic disaster, without this massive depopulation agenda going on, to get the truth, it is so exciting. What is happening right now is literally civilization defining. And you are here with me, and we are pursuing this together. When I go out in public now, just thinking about the 6 million video thing again, I mean, I went out the other day buying some equipment to get this streaming setup going. Everywhere I went, people know who I am. When I went to Fry's Electronics, there was a guy there named Connor. Hey, buddy. And we talked for a long time. And he knew everything about my work. And he just happens to walk up to me as I'm getting out of my car. And we had a wonderful conversation. So I am open. When people bump into me in public, I try to be as open as I can be. If I'm busy, I don't always have a lot of time to talk. It gets really crazy at conferences because everybody's there and they all want 5 minutes alone. You can't really do that. But I want to share this information with you. I want to share these briefings. That's why we're doing this live streaming. If you can help us by participating in my conference coming up, that would be incredible. Because that is a way to make sure that no matter what kind of hijinks go on, if 5.75 million videos disappear, if our funding streams are trying to be cut off, all these different things that are happening, you can be involved, you can help us, and that is so important. So let's go over to that one now. So this is a really amazing time in our history. Thank you for sticking with me. I know this is long. I didn't expect it was going to take this long, but there's a lot to talk about. We are going through this evolution of consciousness, and I will continue to be giving you articles. I will continue to be participating in videos. I'm working on larger entertainment initiatives in the future. Now, entertainment is the name of the showbiz, okay? It's called the entertainment industry. So don't hate me for that. It doesn't mean that I'm saying that this is entertainment. This is not for entertainment purposes only. I believe the things I'm telling you because I've heard this stuff. I've done the research for years. It's just that when you do television or film or documentaries or anything like that, it's called the entertainment industry, okay? Just so there's no confusion. We are pursuing some very exciting stuff on that front, and I'm not going to talk about it until I know that we've got it. But in the meantime, I am definitely doing Ascension Mystery School, Edge of Wonder videos, and I'm going to keep using this as well. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. I want to thank you for being with me, and again, thank you for all your participation. Thank you for your super chats. Thank you for being there at patreon.com/dwilcock. And thank you for sharing the word with others, being prepared, and bravely stepping forward to help save the world, because that is literally what this is. This is a hero's quest. You can pick it up and become part of the most amazing transformation in human history. And let's roll that intro at the end here. Thanks, everybody. David Wilcock, and I'll see you next time.